Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, July 22nd, 2017. This is episode 1406. Enjoy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. I'm the Tech Guy. Yeah, time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, autonomous vehicles, self-driving vehicles, vehicles that don't drive at all, anything with a chip in it. I guess that would include. I'm not going to do car repairs. Nope. Mm-mm. Sorry. Can't help you there. So, you know, Elon Musk, the king of autonomous vehicles, is also, there's a new category. I think we're going to call it AI deniers. He's a guy who is very worried about the revenge of the robots, artificial intelligence. He says, we need to make laws now because, well, I think he's watched too many movies, to be honest with you. Too many. He's what, Terminator and The Matrix, and he's really afraid that if these machines are artificially intelligent and they get smarter and smarter, pretty soon they're just going to say, what do we need those humans for and wipe us off the face of the earth? I was reading an article today an interview with Rodney Brooks. He's a founding director of MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Lab, so he ought to know something about artificial intelligence. Co-founder of a couple of companies, iRobot and Rethink Robotics. He's, you know, made his living teaching and making robots. And Connie Loizos over at TechCrunch interviewed him and talked a little bit about this Elon Musk thing. She says, you're writing a book on AI, so I have to ask you, Elon Musk expressed again this past weekend that AI is an existential threat to human beings. Agree? And Brooks said, there are quite a few people out there who have said that AI is an existential threat. Stephen Hawking, right? There's a smart guy. Astronomer Royal Martin Rees, who's written a book about it. And they share a common thread, says Brooks, in that they don't work in AI themselves. For those of us who work in AI, we know how hard it is to get anything to actually work. We're not too worried. We're not too worried. He says people look at Google's AlphaGo, which, you know, beat the world's reigning Go champion at Go, which is a very hard thing to do.
I added hard thing to your to-do list.
Okay. That's my Amazon Echo. And I said something about it's hard to beat Go, and she took it personal. Not talking to you. Not talking. By the way, my to-do list now has hard thing on it, which wasn't what I was anticipating. Getting up. All right. Continuing on. You see, there's an illustration of, and this is what Brooks is saying, AlphaGo looks like it could beat, you know, it's like thinking, it's smart, but it's not. It's a very limited machine. It can't do anything beyond Go. I just demonstrated this with the Amazon Echo. Not talking to you. I'm not talking to you.
Sorry. It looks like I didn't hear you correctly.
I know.
Please try again.
No, no. My point being, these things are actually dumb as bricks. They merely have and Brooks is saying that too, a thin veneer of what looks like intelligence. So he says, you shouldn't really start regulating now. If you're going to have regulation now, either it applies to something and changes something in the world, or it doesn't apply to anything. Here's a man with logic, right? It either applies to something or nothing. If it doesn't apply to anything, well, what's the regulation for? What behavior do you want to change, Elon? It's too soon, in other words, he's saying. We can't regulate something that doesn't even exist yet. There is no artificial intelligence. Then a little zinger. By the way, let's talk about regulation on self-driving Teslas, because that's a real issue. Okay. Point set match to the head of MIT's artificial intelligence, Rodney Brooks. That's a very good point. There's no point in regulating artificial intelligence. We don't know what it is. It's not working yet. Obviously, in this little demonstration, this little play that I just did with the Amazon Echo. I don't want to call her, Alexa. Because so many of you who have Echoes and are listening. I know you don't. I'm going to mute you. Goodbye. So many of you who have those may be listening near or on it. So a lot of people listen to the show on their Echo. And as a result, if I say the A word, it wakes it up and does things. And I don't want to do that. But now, I named mine because I don't want to say the A words. I may name mine Echo. But the problem with that is, as you can see, I can't even talk about her. There are two other words you can use. You can call her the A word, Alexa. You can call her an Echo. You can call her a computer, which is fun for Star Trek fans, but really problematic for me because I say that word a lot. Or you can call it Amazon. Another example of Amazon's artificial intelligence, they have in the Amazon app now. Actually, it's the Alexa app. They've hidden it away. I don't know. I'm not sure what the point of hiding it away like that is, except maybe it's just a demonstration. It's not ready for prime time. But if you go into the menu on the Alexa app and you go, I don't have it on this one. It's only on my Android. I was looking on my iPhone. There is a program and features menu item that has all sorts of weird little things in it. Amazon, for instance, launched this week something called Spark, a social network for buying stuff. You show pictures of stuff you bought, and then the theory is other people will see it and go, I have to have that, and they'll buy it. And all of it goes through, guess who? Amazon. They also have something called Outfit Compare. I played a little bit with Outfit Compare. I don't know. I just thought, well, let me see, because I'm a guy. I don't have any sartorial taste. But let's just see. So I took a picture of me with what I was wearing to work that day, which I thought was quite a nice outfit. It was it was black and white. But that's, guys look good in black and white. And since we're colorblind and I have gray hair, I thought that was nice. White shirt, black blazer, black slacks, black loafers. Okay, I admit, not so great. But I didn't have a picture of another outfit because I don't have a lot of pictures of me in outfits. Guys don't even call them outfits. Oh, you mean the clothes I'm wearing today? Okay, in my clothes. So I found a picture my wife had taken of me on practically on safari. It was on vacation, wearing a safari hat, pesticide-laden shirt and pants, sun-blocking shirt and pants designed, for safari. A vest, also laden with DEET to keep the bugs away. I had my socks wrapped around my pants leg to keep the fire ants from getting in, so it looked like I was wearing jodhpurs or some weird riding shorts. And then brown sneakers. This is a terrible outfit. Amazon picked that outfit. They said, you look great in this. This is the good outfit. Don't wear that dressy outfit anymore. I mentioned this to my wife. She said, well, yeah, it is the better outfit. So I don't know. Anyway, that's a new feature. You can find that if you – I guess it's not – I thought it was on the you know what? It's not in the Alexa app. That's right. It's in the Amazon shopping app, Amazon app. I apologize for those of you going to the wrong app. I gave you the wrong instructions. You go to the Amazon shopping app. And then you go to programs and features in this outfit compare. I'll tell you what, I will tweet this because I think probably you're thinking, oh, Leo, you're exaggerating. Surely it can't be that bad. Yes. Yes, it was. We'll take a break. Let's get some phone calls. Let's talk about something interesting. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, your calls next. Let me just tweet this, so you can all see it at home. The home version of our game.
Well, actually, it's Leo Laporte. That's my name, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, to be complete. Tech Guy Show on the air, and the phones are lighting up. 888-827-5536, 8888, Ask Leo. Fortunately, Kim Schaffer is here to answer those phones. Hello, Kim. How are you today?
Great. How are you?
I'm really well. Had a little mishap yesterday.
Uh-oh. What happened?
Well, we drove all the way down to the Shoreline Amphitheater.
Oh, you were one of those.
To see Matchbox 20.
And you got all the way there, huh?
Got all the way there. And apparently the Shoreline Amphitheater, which is a concert hall right next to Google, mm-hmm. like Google, is built on shifting sands. It's on landfill.
Yep.
And I guess part of the back stage area crumbled.
Yeah, I heard about this. I heard about it about 4 o'clock.
I wish we had known, because we heard about it like right before we got there.
Oh, that sucks.
They sent us an email. The concert is supposed to begin at 6:45. They sent us an email at 6:55.
So you sat in lovely Friday afternoon.
Oh,
commute
all
traffic.
The way down there. It was horrible, horrible. Anyway, I'm not here to moan and groan. I'm here to answer people's questions.
Yeah.
Well, you knew about it though, huh?
I got a little alert thingy on my phone.
Oh, why don't I? We bought tickets. We should have got a little alert thing.
Yeah, it was on I have local TV station alerts that come
up. Oh, that's it. Yeah, because Ticketmaster didn't want to really tell us, I think.
No.
And they also, incidentally, kind of interestingly, they don't want to give us the money back either. Apparently, I didn't know this. It's up to the band.
Well, they rescheduled, but one of the bands won't be there.
Yeah, I'm not going to go on Tuesday. I have to work.
I heard on the news that they will give money back to people who can't make it.
They say that. Go ahead and try and get it.
Right.
All right. 88. I want to use my vast listening audience to give Ticketmaster a hard time. They charge you so much extra for the handling fees, and then they give you such poor service. It's just depressing.
Yeah. As soon as they found out, they should have let people know.
That's just depressing. Anyway, I should probably help somebody with a real problem.
How about Brian in Seal Beach? He's going to do a presentation with customers all over.
Oh,
he
boy.
Wants to use Skype, and he needs your advice
on
a
boy.
Few things.
Oh, boy. All right. Thank you, Kim Schaffer. Hello, Brian. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. It's Brian.
Hey, Brian. From same Brian from Seal Beach?
Seal Beach. Yes,
Seal
it
Beach.
Is.
Got the right Brian. What can I do for you today?
Okay, so I'm doing a presentation for about 25 of my customers.
Nice.
And I'm going to have 5 speakers at my store, and 2 of them are going to be out of town, and I'm not a Skype person, so I'm not into this video conferencing. So 2 are out of town, 1 on the East Coast, and 1 actually in Italy.
Wow.
And I want to figure out the best software, and I normally don't do this, so it's going to be like a one-time deal, and I want to keep my costs down, and I want my audience to be able to ask questions to the speakers out of town.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a big screen TV up on the wall so everybody in the room could see it.
Okay. Oh, so you're going to be in an auditorium or
it's going to be a room. It's
a room,
in
but
store.
You're in the store.
I'm going to have 25 people.
Yeah.
And so
use Skype.
Okay.
Because, you can, because Skype lets you have group calls and so forth, but there are programs designed for kind of online conferencing that are really probably handier to use. They do things like, for instance, when somebody's speaking, they can put their picture up and on the screen, and you have a side chat which you can use.
We'll be doing PowerPoint also.
You can share your screen. I think it's much easier. So there's 3 big named programs that do this. All of them offer free trials. Since you're going to only do this once, just do the free trial. One is called GoToMeeting. Longtime sponsor of this show, this folks at Citrix. The other would be Zoom, Zoom. And the third is Cisco's WebEx. All 3 of these are the kind of the kings of this. Zoom, GoToMeeting, and WebEx. And all 3 offer free trials, usually for 30 days. So, I would suggest signing up for all 3 at this point and playing with them just to see which ones you like the best.
Use a microphone to pass around the room. Can I connect a microphone?
Yeah, I mean, the challenge will be only to connect a microphone to your computer, because any audio coming through your computer will go out on these meetings. You'll need a way of connecting a microphone to your computer. And that there's a variety of ways. If you have a desktop PC with a mic input, you could get a long, really long wire.
Okay.
But you want to get a microphone that's designed for computers if you already have a computer microphone. You know, you can use one of those headset mics, USB headset mics. But again, you need a long wire.
But I was thinking about renting like a wireless handheld.
If you the people you rent from will help you get the additional gear that you'll need to tie the wireless, the output of the wireless base station to the computer. And yeah, if you go to any AV company that does this, that rents those kinds of things, we'll have excellent advice on what to do.
Now, with the connection to my speaker from Italy, what about the internet speed? Will that be a problem?
It's just unpredictable. Sometimes we get internet callers from overseas that actually sound better than local callers. Because in some countries, they have, you know, the internet is better, or it's very local. It's whatever that person has. You know, I have a lot of experience with this because we've done, for the last 12 years, I've done internet-based, you know, kind of podcast, TV, radio shows using Skype. And, you know, sometimes, particularly from Scandinavia and Asia, the callers have better quality. Italy, it can be touch and go. If he's in a hotel using hotel Wi-Fi, that will be terrible.
No, they're at their home office.
If they're home and a lot of people pay for good internet, that won't be so bad. As long as they have pretty consistently 1 or 2 megabits upstream. And consistency is the whole thing. Tell them to get off wireless if possible. If they can get to wire their computer for this event only, that will be better.
Yeah, we have good internet speed at our place. So, you know, it's not an issue with us. But I'm concerned about
your download speed will affect that, but their upload speed affects it even more.
So it's GoToMeeting and...
And GoToMeeting has a sister product called GoToWebinar that's designed for online webinars. That has more features, like you can do quizzes and stuff. So it just depends how much you want to do. I love GoToMeeting. Zoom is very easy to use. I think they even have a free tier. And then WebEx.
I said, I normally don't do this, so it's like a one-time deal.
But this is done so commonly in business, right? You have a presentation or a meeting, and they have a company that's got people all over the world. It's very common. And so that's why these products exist. There are many others. Google Hangouts also will do this. That's for free. It's probably a good idea to do a rehearsal if you can before you have a...
Oh, yeah. We plan on doing that. I just want to make sure I have the right program and get the microphone set up properly, because I want everything to go smooth.
Oh, of course. What do you sell? What's your store?
We're doing a bike theft prevention seminar.
Oh, what a good idea.
On a bike shop.
That's fantastic.
And we're going to have different speakers from law enforcement, GPS, bike
tracking. Well, another advantage of these programs, they'll let you record this presentation and put it on your website for later use. And it sounds like this is the kind of thing you would like to do that with. So good luck. I think that's fantastic. What a great use of this technology. Log Me In owns GoToMeeting now, and but I think it's pretty much the same product I've used for years. Zoom and Cisco owns WebEx. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Home theater coming up. What's the store? You want to give it a plug?
Yeah, Leo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I own Pedego Electric Bikes of Greater Long
Beach. Oh, I want electric bike, Pedego.
Okay. Well, we do sales, rentals, and tours.
Oh, nice.
We're in Seal Beach. Come on down. We'll put you on, and we'll ride down from Seal Beach to Newport.
Wouldn't that be fun? I love that ride.
Yeah.
What electric bikes do you like?
Pedego. All we do is Pedego.
That's the brand. Pedego.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we've been in business 4 years, and... like I said, we do sales, rentals, and tours. Our website is begraterbikes.com.
I'll give you a plug. That's great.
Yeah, begraterbikes.com. Thank you. And if you're in Orange County, come and visit us. We'll put you on a couple bikes. And they have a little USB port on, so you could charge your phones and all this stuff.
That's really cool. That's so cool. Oh, yeah, wow. I'm looking at your website right now. This is really neat.
That's my partner Beth and me, a picture at the top.
That is that would be a hell of a nice ride. I'd love to do that.
Yeah, quickly, Beth is a writer, and we had Time Warner Cable Business Class. We won a contest 2 years ago to be featured in their national TV commercial.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's on our YouTube channel. But we're a small business, and we sell fun, and these bikes are great. But a lot of these bikes are getting stolen because these are high-ticket $3,000
bikes. Sure, yeah.
And so we got a lot of people interested in this law enforcement. We a Sherlock is a GPS tracking device from Italy.
Yeah.
And we're having all kinds of speakers, you know, just in lock company, bicycle locks, stuff like that.
Well, that is so neat. It's great to talk to you. Next time I'm down your way, I will definitely pop in.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Check us out on BeGraterBikes.com.
I'm on the website right now. I'm showing it on the stream. Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
We were the fourth dealer to open 4 years ago. Now there's 105 worldwide. The world headquarters where they're built, designed, distributed is right here in Orange County, Fountain Valley.
Oh, it's not a Chinese company because most of the electric...
Well, we get our parts from China.
Sure, but,
you know, they're all assembled and designed. So if we have any issues, factory's 10 minutes away.
Neat. Very nice. Well, it's very nice to meet you, Brian.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And I'm going to do everything to make this webcast great.
You're on the right track. And yeah, the nice thing about those programs, they'll let you record it and then put it here on your website, which would be, you know, make it even more valuable.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. My pleasure.
Come down and visit.
I will.
We'll put you on some bikes.
I will. Totally will. Lisa and I will come down. Nice to talk to you. Take care.
Pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Well, that magic music means but one thing. The return of Scott Wilkinson, our home theater geek. That's the name of his podcast at twit.tv/HTG. That's a fine podcast network you're on there, Scott.
Why, thank you so much.
I say that because it's mine. And he also is the – I don't have anything to do with the AVS Forum, though. He is the editor-in-chief at avsforum.com and joins us each week to talk – well, unless he's taking a week off, which he did last week, to talk about home – theater. So I saw a Dunkirk yesterday on a big screen. This is Christopher Nolan's.
Did you see it in IMAX?
No, and that's why I bring it up, because I'm told that it was shot in IMAX and should be seen in IMAX for the greatest
effect. That is correct. Believe it or not, I saw it twice yesterday.
On IMAX?
Once on IMAX.
Yeah.
IMAX 70mm film, which is Nolan's preferred, you know, his top of the line, what he thinks it should be.
Yeah.
And I also went to see it in Dolby Cinema because I wanted to compare them.
And?
You know, I wanted to see the IMAX. I think the IMAX 70mm film is probably the way to go.
Now, I sat really close to the screen. Does that count?
Ooh. Well, that gives me a headache, so I don't do that. But... the 70mm film in IMAX, the black levels were very high. It was not really deep looking.
Oh, it was too bright.
But, yeah, well, you know, film in general, you can't get super deep blacks because there's always going to be some light leaking through from the lamp.
Yeah.
And film projectors are all lamp-based, so they got these giant xenon lamps in them.
Yeah.
But... The reason that I think ultimately IMAX is probably the way to go is because Christopher Nolan shot the movie, as you said, in IMAX with IMAX cameras using 65mm film.
So you could see it in the theater that some are showing the 70mm print on a regular screen.
There are 125 theaters around the country showing it in 70mm. Some of those are IMAX. Some of those are what we call non-IMAX 70mm.
If it's 70mm, is it IMAX aspect ratio? Which is,
yes.
So it's more square, right? It's not...
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And that's the important point here, because he framed all the shots, basically all the shots, to be in that more square aspect ratio.
Ah.
And on a gigantic screen, the one I saw is 80 feet by 60 feet. And it really is very immersive.
When we talk about this stuff, we never talk about the quality of the movie, but this is a very good movie and well worth seeing in whatever format you see. It's really beautifully done, and it's historic, of course.
Yes, and in fact, he was very careful to be very historically accurate.
It's the story of the British retreat from Dunkirk at the very beginning of World War II when the Germans had trapped the entire British army, 400,000
400,000 men
on the beaches of Dunkirk in Normandy. Right, I guess it was Normandy in France. And,
right across the English Channel.
Yeah, and they were saved by a flotilla of civilians coming from England to rescue them, and they rescued nearly everybody. And it's a remarkable story.
Very, very
well done, I thought. But I thought so, too. For us, it's interesting to hear about the technology, of course.
Well, and that's, you know, I mean, other than going to see the movie, that's why I go to see movies, is to evaluate the technology study it, you know. And Christopher Nolan actually shot the movie, the beach scenes anyway, on the beach of Dunkirk.
Wow.
Wow. And he used real planes and real boats.
I thought the Spitfire and the dogfight scenes were amazing. I mean, just
really amazing.
And I can imagine what they must have looked amazing in IMAX.
So
I have to go back and see it again, I guess.
If you can, it's worth it seeing in 70 millimeter. Now, I will tell you that the audio levels were painful.
Yeah. I'm told that you should wear we brought our ear protection, but we didn't.
Your earplugs, good.
Yeah, we didn't wear them. It wasn't that loud. The theater that we were at, it wasn't that loud, so.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. And I measured, and interesting, I when I go to movies, I measure the levels.
Yeah.
I put I tape a microphone onto a cane and I stick it up there so that I can
measure. Oh, I bet the people behind you love that.
Well, I keep it low enough so that they don't. Doesn't bother
that man? Mommy, why is that man holding a cane up? What's going on? What were the levels?
Well, the average level measured in the same way as what's called the reference level in movies wasn't that much greater. It was 89 dB.
Yeah, see, that's
it should
kind of
be
how
85.
There were some deafening moments.
Now, the average measured flat, that is taking all frequencies into consideration equally, was like 105. And that's because of all the explosions where, you know, there's a lot of low frequency information.
Right.
In energy in that soundtrack because of, you know, you saw it, all those explosions have a lot of low frequency energy, so it was actually very loud. And I definitely wore earplugs for a good part of it.
Well, but that's challenging because it's normal level and then it gets very loud. At least a brief loud passage isn't as bad as a continuous loud passage.
Well, that's true. I thought the whole – and Christopher Nolan has said – I'm just about to post my review, actually. I didn't quite get to it by this time. But he has said that he wanted it to be more – he wanted to prioritize suspense over character development.
Which is funny because we know how it ends.
We do, exactly.
But we don't know individual stories.
The individual stories are fictional. The surrounding time, the events that happened are historic and very accurately depicted, but the actual people involved are mostly fictional, but there isn't that much dialogue even. It's just this atmosphere of anxiety. I thought it was like 2 hours, or it's actually fairly short for an epic.
It's an hour 47. It's not a long movie.
Yeah, it's not a long movie.
But it's a short. It's a small incident in a much larger war. They're not trying to get the whole war in there. Now you said not 70 meter, but 65 millimeter film.
No. Well, that's the film that you shoot on, and then you transfer it to 70. I'm not sure why that is, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
That you actually shoot on 65 millimeter film, and then you transfer it during the editing and post-production
process.
So
we're not seeing, when we see this, in the aspect ratio that he shot it, if we're not seeing it on a squarish screen.
Mm-hmm.
On the wide screen, we're going to see different stuff.
You're going to see it cropped. If you go to a regular movie theater or even Dolby Cinema, which I saw there last night, it's cropped to an aspect ratio of 2.2:1. And so there's a lot of information above and below the active image area.
Oh, that's interesting. You're not missing left and right. It's above and below.
No, you're missing top and bottom.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, I thought that was important. Because, I always advocate for reproducing the director's intent as closely as possible.
Right.
And that means seeing it in that more square aspect ratio.
Yeah.
And on as large a screen as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Which would be an IMAX, really. They're doing it in IMAX. They've released it in six or seven different formats. There's IMAX 70 millimeter, IMAX digital, 70 millimeter not in IMAX, 35 millimeter film, and then digital. And so if you can see it in 70 millimeter, either IMAX or not IMAX, 70 millimeter not IMAX simply won't be as large a screen. But it'll still be close.
Well, and apparently you'll only get the full picture if you go to an IMAX laser cinema or a 70 millimeter IMAX.
No, only 70.
The Xenon system, which some IMAX theaters still use, cannot fill the full height of the screen. It says. So that's interesting. I'll send you this link. So
please do. Yeah.
See it in IMAX if you can.
By all means.
Yeah. Scott Wilkinson, Home Theater Geek, twit.tv/HTG for his podcast, avsforum.com for his writing, and look for his review coming soon there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, this is it's an infographic put together. So the issue was not merely that it's IMAX versus and 70 millimeter versus some other format, but digital versus film.
Mm-hmm.
And the digital issue is also an issue. That's interesting. But anyway, IMAX Xenon has a 19...
Oh, send me that link, actually. Yeah. That would be very good.
Yeah. This is in DP Review, so I trust these guys.
Okay, good.
DPReview.com. It'd probably be on the front page there.
And this Dunkirk Format Guide. That's good.
Yeah. Because...
I found a video that explains it in about 4 minutes on Slate. So I'm going to include that video.
Okay.
It shows all the different aspect ratios and how much gets cropped out and stuff like that. I mean, it's pretty interesting.
I mean, it stood up on the – I don't know. I don't think we saw it in 70 millimeter. We saw it in Mountain View at one of those big Century theaters. And they have some sort of Century projection system.
Do you know whether it was on film or digital?
I don't know.
You know, the other thing that I didn't mention on the air was that in Dolby Vision and at IMAX, for example, the soundtrack has no overhead channels.
Oh.
Christopher Nolan doesn't really believe in overhead channels.
Interesting.
He even resists surround. I've heard it said that he once said if he could make movies in mono, he would.
How funny.
Yeah.
It was luxury lounge seating, but...
Oh, power recliners?
Yeah, power recliners, and but it doesn't... it's XD, they call it. I don't know what XD is.
Oh, that's Cinemark, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Cinemark.
Cinemark XD.
I don't know what they do.
I don't either. It's probably digital, which means it was the cropped format, cropped aspect ratio, if that's true. I suspect Cinemark XD is digital.
Yeah. So it's interesting. The blacks weren't very good.
No, they were very bad.
What is that attributable to?
Because it's film.
Film doesn't have the dynamic range.
Well, because the lamp is pushing so much light through, it's kind of like an LCD TV. Even if you turn the LCD pixels off, you block as much light as you can. You can't block 100% of the light. Yeah. Some of it gets through. Same thing with film.
Right.
IMAX
laser is the way to see it if you can.
Well, but then you're going to probably get cropping there too.
Oh, crap.
It's a real puzzlement and a real confusing.
Well, that's what this article in DP Review says. You're probably never going to see it in the way Nolan intended it.
Well, only I think you're going to see it in the way Nolan intended. Only if you go to IMAX 70 millimeter film.
Okay.
Which there's one in LA. It's at least one. I went to the Universal City Walk, where they installed a film projector specifically for this.
Just
movie.
For this, wow.
Yeah. But there you can see
the digital is the this is a really good graphic. The digital. Is the issue, isn't it? Because no 2K, 4K format will encompass the full frame.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Huh.
And interestingly, in the IMAX presentation, most of the movie is in that 1.43:1 aspect ratio, almost square, except for the shots inside the little ships. the little boat, the private boat yeah. that were coming over to save yeah. the soldiers.
They couldn't get a camera in there, yeah.
They couldn't get a big but that requires a big giant camera. Right. They couldn't get it in there. Right. So the aspect ratio actually switches during the movie.
Yeah. Here's an animated GIF they made of the various aspect ratios.
Oh, look
so
at
this
that.
Same
yeah,
scene,
you see,
what you'll see.
Yeah.
I kind of like the wide format. Top, can you do the top of the hour?
Sure, yeah.
Hang on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. On the line from Rancho Santa Margarita, Matt. Hello, Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful. I've been listening to you about every Saturday when I do my rounds.
I like it. I like it. What are your rounds? What are you doing your rounds on?
I check water sites. I work for a water district.
Nice. All right.
Yeah.
If you have to, if you have to cut off because you got a leak or anything, just let. It's fine. Just go.
Okay, we'll do.
Okay. What can I do for you?
I bought a sound bar a little while ago. Not really thinking that it wouldn't work with my receiver because it's not a passive sound bar. I was just wondering the easiest way to connect multiple devices to it because I don't have an optical import on my TV.
So you kind of want you have one soundbar and you'd like to have your music from other devices and your TV and your Blu-ray and what you know a bunch of different devices going into that single soundbar.
Basically, I mean the only thing I could think of was getting like a USB switch or I mean a HDMI switch.
What kind of input does the soundbar have?
It's HDMI. It's a newer soundbar. It's a Curb Samsung soundbar.
So it's designed to be kind of plugged into your TV and then plugged into the cable box, kind of, that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's exactly what it does.
Yeah. So the input, the only inputs it has are HDMI.
Yep. Well, it has the infrared.
Oh, it does. Okay.
So it's I don't have an infrared on my TV, unfortunately.
So the real solution here is an AV receiver. Okay. The idea of an AV receiver, I mean, among other things, it's an amplifier, allows you to drive more speakers. But the real reason most people end up getting one is because it allows you to have five or sometimes seven or more HDMI inputs and one HDMI output.
Yeah, I've tried that with my receiver, but it's like the soundbar and the receiver are fighting each other.
Could be because the soundbar is powered. Yeah. You know what? I wonder... I happen to have Marshall McLuhan right here. I mean, Scott Wilkinson right here. I wonder if Scott... So, you see the problem, Scott. He's got the powered soundbar. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a problem. There is an optical input to the soundbar?
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah, and that's the only thing. I looked that up, but I don't have an optical input on my TV because it's a little bit...
No, you need an optical output from your TV.
I mean, yeah, that's what I'm sorry, an optical output.
Oh, okay, all right.
So then I could run them off the TV, but that won't work. I was just wondering, do you think a switch would work, like an HDMI switch?
Yeah, that's my best solution if you're going to keep that soundbar.
Yeah, it's going to be for a little while until I redo my whole entire system. I'll get a passive soundbar next time.
Then I think an HDMI switch is the only solution.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I just didn't want to buy one and waste some money if it wasn't
that horribly they're not expensive. That expensive. The real issue I have with them is they're kind of funky. Like, you know, you have to switch, and then there's a whole handshake that has to happen again, and it's just a real pain in the butt.
And it probably won't handle the latest sort of formats.
Right.
You know, it's an interim patch. You know, it's kind of a temporary fix.
Yeah, don't get a fancy one. Don't get an auto switching fancy one. They never auto switch.
Right. Go to Monoprice or Amazon Basics probably has one.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Okay, awesome.
Hey, appreciate the call. Take care. And Scott, I appreciate your hanging around.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. I was watching Annie Hall the other day. I was watching that exact moment when Woody Allen is getting so tired of a pontificating professor behind him talking about the works of Marshall McLuhan. And Woody, remember that? Woody Allen turns to him and says, "Would you just shut up? You're really annoying me. And I don't think you know anything about McLuhan." And the guy says, "Well, I'll have you know, I teach a course on modern media at Columbia University." And then Woody says, "Well, I happen to have Marshall McLuhan right here." He pulls him out from behind a poster. And McLuhan says, "You know nothing of my work." I'm surprised they let you teach a course. Woody yeah, then right. says, don't you wish that would happen more often in real life? All right. Thank you, Scott. I appreciate your helping out on that one. Lou is next from Arizona. Hi, Lou.
Hi, Leo. Actually, right now I'm in Iowa on a comedy kiteboarding road trip.
Oh, wow. Are you a comedian?
Yeah, last time I talked to you, I didn't do the comedy stuff, just the kiteboarding. That made me think of Scott and his kites.
You do kiteboarding. That means you ride like a surfboard with a kite? I don't understand what that is.
Yep, big kite up in the wind pulls you. If you go to ArizonaLou.com, excuse the plug.
Oh, no, I'm going there right now. ArizonaLou.com.
Yeah, break the website.
Let's break it. Arizona, L-O-U. Yeah, I found you.
Yep.
All right.
Or you can Google, you can search for America's favorite old man. And I come up first.
Nice.
So you're probably
Wait a minute, and you donate all of the money you make to Duet?
Well, I'm to the stage in comedy, my comedy career, where most of my appearances are free or cheap.
So you don't make any money?
I'm having fun.
But you pass the hat, I'm sure, for Duet at the end of the night, right?
Actually, I sell T-shirts for Duet.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah. Well, that's cool. So what can I do to help you?
Well, the problem is when I do shows that are longer than an hour, I have trouble. My Canon camcorder does okay, but everything else I use croaks.
You know why?
Yeah.
You know
regular
why?
Camera.
There's no reason it can't.
Yeah, because in Europe, somebody.
You do know why.
That. It was a tax problem.
It's exactly
for
right.
Camcorders.
It's exactly right. Yeah. So if you're using a still camera, they don't want to pay the tax for a camcorder. So they artificially limit it to half an hour of record time. Any more than that.
It doesn't even apply to the U.S.
Well, and here's the good news. There's a lot, especially Canon. A lot of firmware out there that will turn off this artificial limitation. In the early days, there was a legitimate reason for this limitation because the chip would get hot and they didn't want them to overheat. I don't think that's a problem with any modern still camera anymore. So look for firmware. I know Canon, there's some really famous alternative third-party firmware for Canon that will turn off this
feature. Panasonic.
I would search for that as well. I bet you the one for Canon's called Magic Lantern. Let me just see if Magic Lantern supports Panasonic as well. It might.
So that's not a Canon company.
No, it's just a third party open source software that does things like, turns on neat new features. Now it looks like it's all Canon cameras that they support right now. But I wonder, I know, isn't that rotten? But I wouldn't be surprised if there's somebody for Panasonic that does that. Which Panasonic do you have?
Shoot, I'm going to have
new, That's all right. The newer Panasonics, the GH, I can't remember what it is, one, are designed for video as much as stills, and those will record an hour. So, but an older Panasonic might not. I'll tell you what, Luke, keep checking at techguylabs.com. We'll see if we can get the answer up there on the website. And everybody should visit, go see Lou when he's performing. There's all of his stuff is at ArizonaLou.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. ArizonaLouKiteBoarder.com. Did I get that right, Lou? Is it ArizonaLou.com or?
Either one will get me.
Okay.
Since I started doing comedy, it's ArizonaLou.com.
Got it.
And it goes to the same place.
Yeah.
My real question, didn't get around to. Was
okay. What's
doing
your...
it with my, I use wide angle from the back with my cell phone. It's a Nexus XP, and the telephone software randomly, or the video camera software quits, and I need to know either you can help or the your guys in the back of the class know what camera can I install on my Nexus 6P Android phone that will go and go and go without stopping or losing files.
That's interesting. So when you record on the default Android software, and you're using a Google phone, so it's really the default Google camera, after it quits, mm-hmm. Is it at a random time, or is it after 20 minutes each time, or what is it?
It's a random time.
Yeah, so it's crashing, in other words.
I installed Camera MX. Sometimes I have to use external power, but that's no problem. And when it quits recording at about 40 minutes, it loses the whole everything you already
recorded. Oh, because it doesn't save. It just crashes. Anybody?
Camera does save it.
Anybody have a suggestion for a Nexus camera app or video app for Android that wouldn't have any limits and wouldn't crash? How long is it? An hour set?
Well, it's I do an hour, a little over.
Any suggestions in the back of
the default
class?
Camera, when it quits,
he's using the Google camera.
What you recorded.
It still saves. It doesn't crash, but it,
quits and saves.
Let me see if I can, I'm waiting for the chat room. They're busy talking about Comic-Con, I think. Let me see what Android Authority, the 15 best camera apps. I know one to try.
Where did you see that?
I know. Well, this is on Android Authority, but I know one to try. This is considered by many to be the best video app for Android. And boy, if this couldn't do it, I don't know what would. It would. It's called Cinema FV5. Cinema FV5.
That's Foxtrot Victor.
And the number five, you got it. And
mm-hmm.
This is the most sophisticated video. It's not free, although it's on sale, it says, 50% off right now. And I own it, so I don't see a price. But they do have a light version. You know, try the light version first and see if it does what mm-hmm. you want. But this is the most sophisticated video app I know of on Android. Cinema F, it's from FGAE is the company, and they make a still version of this as well. But Cinema
FGAE.com?
Well, I would just look on the Android store for Cinema FV, Foxtrot Victor.
Yeah, okay.
I'll tell you what, if anything will work for a longer recording, it'll be this.
Yeah. Okay, well, hey, you made my day, I hope.
Well, I hope so, too, and I hope we send some traffic to your way.
Oh, that would be cool, yeah. And sometime when I'm in your area, I'll stop by.
All right. Take care, Lou. Please do.
Yep.
All right. Scott Wilkinson has been very patient, waiting for me to finish up with Lou.
Hey, always happy to help somebody.
Thank you for being here. Let me put clock up. Still got some time.
Okay. You know, we didn't even talk about the flat panel shootout.
Oh, was that this year? This week?
That was last week.
Well, now we know we have other things we can talk about on the show.
Yeah, you want to save that for next week?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you can talk about it now, but let's do it next week as well on the radio.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, but you bet. Oh wow, 240 seconds to go. Woohoo! So, let's see. People have been talking about Comic-Con, and Keith 43 saw Dunkirk yesterday, I guess the 5:30 show at the same theater I go to, Burbank 16. I went to the 8:30 show, and interestingly, it was not mixed in Dolby Atmos, so supposedly they didn't use the overhead speakers, although I have to say it sounded like there was some overhead action to me, and I'm wondering whether or not the theater was using the pro version of Dolby Surround, which is the Atmos upmixer. So if you have a 5.1 at home anyway, and you have an Atmos system, Dolby Surround will upmix and put stuff into those overhead speakers. And it works surprisingly well from what I've heard. So everything I've heard of it, so maybe there's a professional version. Maybe it's the same version. I don't really know. I've got a note out to a buddy of mine at Dolby, who hopefully can shed some light on that subject. Drew Nielsen, yeah, I have not ever read anything that Christopher Nolan's said about why he doesn't like surround sound, but I have read that he doesn't. And Key 43 asked me if I saw Hateful Eight in 70mm. I almost went when it was out because that was also playing in 70mm. Quentin Tarantino, I think that was, right? But I decided not to go because everything I had heard was that it is so violent and so bloody that, you know, I don't go to horror movies for that reason. And I decided not to go to that one because of that. I just don't want to fill my mind with such images. I get kind of squeamy when it comes to, you know, blood and guts. Some people like it. Okay, fine. You dig it. That's great. But I don't. I almost didn't see Dunkirk. I mean, I reluctantly decided to see it because it was this big cinematic event. And, you know, I said, okay, I'm going to go see it in 70mm film, and I'm going to go see it in Dolby Cinema, and I'm going to compare the two. I did it more for work than for enjoyment because I don't like war movies. I never saw Thin Red Line. I never saw Hacksaw Ridge. I didn't see any of those movies because it just, you know, they fill my mind with stuff that I'm not interested in filling my mind with. But this was an exception, and it was almost bloodless, which that was good. I mean, it was 2 hours of anxiety, high anxiety. I kept noticing that certain muscles in my body were tensing up, and I just had to relax them. That was challenging. But it was worth doing, I think, because of the comparison between the two. I'm almost done writing it up. I'll post it on AVS Forum pretty soon, and I hope you go check it out. So with only 43 seconds left to go, or less. Sybil, I've never played Sackbutt in costume at Comic-Con. I've never been to Comic-Con. I'd like to go sometime, but I never have been. I've got a niece, a god niece, essentially, who loves to go. Anyway, that's it.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and all that jazz. You know, all the things with a chip in them. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. I end up recommending our caller earlier, Lou the Comic, wanted to record more than an hour of his performance, but he found that the point-and-shoot cameras he was buying would stop. And there were two reasons for that. Early on, I think they were worried the chips would overheat after a certain amount of time. So they would limit it, you know, to 10 or 15 or 20 minutes of video. And truthfully, that should be enough. You don't really, do you really want to record those long passages? You know, the theory was, especially companies like Panasonic, hey, we make camcorders. Buy one of those if that's what you want to do. But more and more professionals, movie makers even, TV makers, television show makers and others are using these great still cameras to make video. In fact, Panasonic has jumped on that bandwagon. Their GH series, now the GH5 is the latest, are as much video cameras as they are still cameras and are widely used for video, as is the Canon 5D and others. So I think that those limits are, in many cases, disappearing. The other reason for the limits, as Lou kind of alluded to, is, and I don't, this sounds, it's one of those things that sounds apocryphal, but I've been told it by enough people that I believe it, that camcorders are taxed at a higher rate than still cameras in some jurisdictions, Europe particularly. And so to avoid being taxed as a camcorder, the camera manufacturers artificially stop recording after 30 minutes, the still cameras, so that you won't have to pay the camcorder taxes. I would love to get that confirmed. I've read it in several places. And it sounds like one of those stories Snopes should debunk. But maybe that's why. It's hard to explain otherwise. Certainly they're taking that limit off these days in many cases. So if you get, nowadays I would say, in general, it'd be silly to buy a camcorder. There's a much, much less of a market for camcorders because most people have still cameras now that shoot very good video. And if you have a camera with interchangeable lenses, like the Panasonic GH5 or a Canon 5D or a Nikon or an Olympus, those are great video cameras. Those are really great video cameras. As I mentioned, the 30 limit has been modified by hacking firmware in many cases, too. So that's the other thing to look for, a firmware hack, like Magic Lantern that lets you do more. Brian on the line from Orange County, California. Hi, Brian. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, so I've asked everybody in the video world, and nobody can give me an answer why this is happening.
Uh-oh. Okay.
It's a Time Machine backup problem and my Final Cut libraries. So I shoot weddings. I shoot, like, every weekend. I come home. I download my footage. I back up my library with Time Machine, and then I go on my backup drive and make sure that the library and the event that I just backed up is actually there.
Yeah.
So about maybe a year ago, I noticed that my libraries weren't backing up anymore.
Yeah.
The entire library is just completely missing.
Yeah.
I troubleshooted and figured out if I close Final Cut, then it's like it looks back and sees that there's no library backup and rebacks up the entire library, which at times can be like a terabyte.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, first of all, stop using Time Machine. Number one, that's a terrible solution that Apple created for people, normal people who couldn't be bothered to back up. But everybody who understands the internal workings of Time Machine is aghast that Apple released a product like this. And I have heard so many people have problems like yours or worse. You know, Time Machine's been backing it up, but I lost the original and now I can't find it because it didn't really back it up and things like that. Time Machine's not good. It's fine for casual users, but I would never rely on it. And a wedding photographer, that's the last. You need pro backup, dude. You know that.
Do they have the?
They're not going to stage that wedding all over again just because you lost the video, right?
Yeah.
You ever watch that show, Bridezilla? So we want to make sure you don't lose that video. So there's a couple of ways. There's a couple of good ways to do this. You're on a Mac. But here, you know, truthfully, I would rethink your whole strategy at this point because photographers, you're professional, right? You get paid to do this, right?
Yeah, videography.
Yeah. You have a higher duty not to lose data than you know, the average Joe on the street. You really got to be – backup's important to you. So a couple of things I'm going to do. First of all, I'm going to refer you to a site that I refer every photographer to by a good friend of mine. In fact, you might even want to pick up one of his books. Peter Krogh is a professional photographer, has done his share of weddings, K-R-O-G-H. He wrote the DAM book, D-A-M, or Digital Asset Management. He's just published the second edition of the DAM book. You can go to thedambook.com to find out more of it. And it's really for still photographers, but many of the lessons apply. Not all the workflow lessons, obviously, but many of the lessons apply, and in particular, his backup lesson. In fact, it's so important that he has worked with the Library of Commerce and the Association of Professional Photographers to create a website called dpbestflow, as in bestworkflow.org. Now, again, the still workflow is not the same, obviously, as a video workflow. In fact, one of the chief problems you're having is you've got these massive files and you've got these projects open and so forth. That's probably one of the things that's confusing Time Machine. But it shouldn't confuse a good backup program. If a backup program sees a file on there, they should back it up. And the reason Time Machine's getting confused is because it uses symbolic links. It's a very funky system. If you go to dpbestflow.org, in the resources section, there's a whole thing. I think it's in the resource. Or maybe let me look. I'm going to have to look on site navigation. There's a whole chapter on backup. He created something I've used a lot. Best practices. There it is. Under best practices, he created look at backup, something called 3-2-1 backup. And this is designed for wedding photographers. Three copies of everything. The original and two backups is fine. Each of the backups should be on different media, and one of them should be off site. Okay, so your time machine doesn't qualify, really. You really want to take a look at this and read it. I would suggest, since you're on a Mac, a really excellent program called Super Duper that works with Time Machine, so you can continue to use Time Machine for your kind of like immediate backup needs. But I would also use Super Duper. And what it will do is it'll create a duplicate of your hard drive that's bootable, for one thing. So if your hard drive, internal hard drive, dies, you can boot up an external drive and go back to work, which may be important if you're in a time crunch. But it will also do incremental backups. And that's the thing Time Machine doesn't seem to be doing very well with your video files. You don't want to do what Time Machine does, the versioning that Time Machine does of massive video files, but you do want to do incremental backups. So if you change a file, change an edit list, crop a file, you know, trim a file, all of that's saved. And Super Duper will do that. Super Duper is a must for anybody with a Macintosh. Highly recommended. So I've given you a couple assignments. One, to read this backup documents at dpbestflow.org. In fact, maybe even read Peter's book, The Damn Book. Excellent book. And then go out and get Super Duper. That's something you can do today. And get an extra hard drive and use Super Duper to back up your assets. Backing up your assets is the most important thing, right? You can always go back and get an edit list together or, you know, redo the edit if you had to. But you can't afford to lose those original digitized videos. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I said Congress, didn't I? Library of Congress. This is the American Society of Media Photographers, and it was funded by the Library of Congress because they understand the importance of backing up archives and data. Yeah, Time Machine, iCloud, and Super Duper would be a good triple threat because the iCloud gives you the off-site stuff, although it's an expensive cloud storage. At least it's off-site. Did I say Commerce? Library of Congress. I like the Library of Commerce. Time Machine's not suitable, period. It's just a piece of junk. But I understand why people use it. There's a convenience factor to it. Just don't rely on it, I guess would be what I would say. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. iPad 84462 in our chat room says, and I think he's not wrong, those 3-2-1 rules aren't even good enough for wedding photographers. Three copies under your control and two different cloud services. Right. Sure. Not a bad idea. You got to be paranoid about losing your data. That's the whole point of backup. And if you're in a business where losing your data could mean loss of business, multiple online copies aren't a bad idea. The nice thing about photography is there are lots of places you can back up photography. Even for me personally, because I really love photography and I'm kind of a serious hobbyist, even I have multiple backups of my photos. So 8888 Ask Leo. So I get a little passionate when we're talking about backup. I do. Next on the line, Jose from Burbank. Hey, Jose.
Hey, how's it going, Leo?
It's going great. Welcome.
Good, good, man. I'm over here, you know, just driving around, working.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had a question about Wi-Fi. So at my house, we have Wi-Fi, but when we first got it, it was installed into one of the bedrooms in the house. That bedroom, it's not, like, very, like, I want to say, like, centered in the middle of the
right.
house.
Right. Yeah, it's on the edge.
Yeah, so my room is kind of on the other end, so I get, like, you know, like a half a bar to, like, cut out. You know,
that's not good enough. Yeah, you need at least three or four bars to really be usable.
Yeah, exactly. So the other day, we had an outage, and it was actually yesterday, and they came by, and the tech was telling us that to get the box moved, they'd have to, like, take out all the wires and rewire and this and that. So it's going to cost us like a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah, it's in the bedroom because that's where the line that comes out of the wall for your internet.
Yes. So I guess that's how they did it, you know, like whenever
There's a couple ways to do this. You're not alone. This is increasingly common. And part of it is, you know, just we're putting more and more strain on the Wi-Fi. But part of it also is there's a lot of people, everybody, all your neighbors are using it too. And so there's a lot of usage of the band. So there are some solutions out there. There's the one that you're thinking of, because I could see what you told Kim, is an extender, right? That's what they told you.
Yeah, it's like an extender or a booster or something like that.
Yeah, so the extenders are the old way of doing it. And they work, but they work at a price. They cut your bandwidth in half because that's how they work. They have to talk to the base station half the time, so you only get half of their attention, which means half the throughput. So that's not an ideal way to do it. It's the least expensive way to do it. So it depends on how important Wi-Fi is to you, right? Is it an older building?
No, it's a house.
So sometimes older houses have walls that don't get Wi-Fi doesn't go through. If there's any metal in the walls, for instance, that's bad. But if it's just drywall, not plaster, but drywall, that usually isn't too bad. But the walls are not great. You know, Wi-Fi is at a very high frequency. That it's at microwave frequencies, and so walls actually get in the way. Humans get in the way. Ideally, Wi-Fi is line of sight, but that's impractical. Everybody'd have to be able to see in that bedroom. That's no good. You can't do that, right? So there's a couple of ways to do this. The extender is one way. What that is a Wi-Fi access point that's a receiver and transmitter. You put it near enough to the base unit that it can pick up a decent signal, but it's closer to your bedroom, so your signal will improve. But as I said, so that's one way to do it, generally the most common way, but not the most effective way. Another way to do it would be to use some sort of networking that allows you to do wired networking in your house. This is probably the next least expensive way to do it. A company called, there are a lot of companies that do this, it's called Power Line Networking. And the reason I ask if you have an older house, not only for the walls, but it's also the quality of your wiring. A newer house this will work better. But it's going to use the electrical wiring in your house like for network cables, which is a little strange, but it turns out it's possible with the proper filtering and so forth. And the way these work, this power line networking works, is you'll plug one unit next to your cable modem or your DS, I think it's probably a DSL modem. You plug one unit in next to that. And then as long as you're all on one fuse box, one connection, you can plug in another unit on a plug in your bedroom. And in effect, that's a wired connection now between you and your bedroom, which you can then plug into with your laptop, or you could put a Wi-Fi unit on that. That actually works pretty well, and I've done that. It also cuts bandwidth a little bit because you're sharing the electrical wiring with electricity. It can't give you full bandwidth. But I would recommend a company called TP-Link. And TP-Link makes a variety of power line networking tools, including one that is a Wi-Fi access point. So you would put the base unit in next to your router in the other bedroom, go to your bedroom, plug in the Wi-Fi access point unit into the wall. That's going to get its internet through the electrical wiring, and then it'll be a Wi-Fi base station right next to you. You can buy multiple ones of those. That's another way to do it. And I've done that, and it works fairly well. And that's also fairly inexpensive. Those TP-Link units are $30 or $40. They're not very expensive. They're very good. Another way to do it is the high-priced way to do it, but is also very effective. And actually, this is what I've ended up doing. And you hear a lot of talk about it. In fact, one of the companies that makes this, one of the early companies that started doing this, Eero, is a sponsor, so I should mention that. But Eero is one, they call these mesh Wi-Fi networks. And instead of buying one unit, you'd replace your existing Wi-Fi access point with an Eero base station. And usually they come in packs of three, although you can buy them individually, but you'd want to probably buy a pack of three. And then you use an app on your phone to place the other two kind of logically around the house. And then it works like an extender, except it doesn't cut the bandwidth in half. It's full speed, and you get wonderful coverage all over your house. So there's a lot of companies that make these. My favorites include Eero's, Netgear makes something called the Orbi, O-R-B-I. Well, I'll give you a few more, and then I'll tell you the negative on this, which I can tell you in one word. The Orbi's good. I've been using something called the Plume that's really interesting. The Plumes are a little less expensive, but you buy one for every room. But it's kind of a clever system. I've been very happy with the Orbi and the Plume I've used. I use an Eero at home right now. I sit up in my mom with an Eero. Linksys has something called the Velop. There's Amplify from Ubiquiti. They're the company that kind of invented this kind of. They call it mesh networking. The negative in every respect is it's expensive. To get started in a mesh system, you're going to spend $300. And that's pretty typical price. It'll include one base unit and two satellites, probably enough. Eero says each unit covers about 1,500 square feet. So for almost any home, unless you have a palace, that's three of them are enough. But the nice thing is if you need more, you can add more. Once you have the base unit, you can add these little beacons. So I'm very happy with those. The negative price is really expensive. So I've given you three choices. You could use an extender. I would try the Powerline networking from TP-Link if price is sensitive. But if you're willing to spend the money, there's nothing better than those $300 mesh units. And my favorite is the Eero on that one. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. Let me give you the I used these until I got the Eero. And I was very happy. Let me see if I can find the TP-Link Powerline Networking. So these are really cool because this is the Wi-Fi kit. And it's, $100. But one plugs in next to your router, and then another one plugs in your bedroom, for instance. And now you're going to have high-speed Wi-Fi in your bedroom. It does a pretty good job. So this is, it's not probably as fast as the Eero, but it depends kind of on your electrical system. He's been everywhere, man. He's Johnny Jett. Breathing the country air because he's a traveling guy. He's in Toronto right now visiting with family, but he joins us no matter where he is every weekend to talk about using technology to travel better. And hello, Johnny Jett. Good to see
hello,
you.
Hello, Leo.
He's got O Canada M&Ms. They yes, know how to get you, don't they? I swear.
They do.
I went to the M&M store in Las Vegas. You can get all sorts of holiday treats, M&M treats.
Yeah, I mean, it's brilliant marketing.
It is.
Brilliant.
So we were talking, and I had just read an article in Business Insider, although I've seen it in other places over the years, saying why – well, the article's titled, Why Flight Attendants Avoid Drinking Tap Water on Airplanes. And in particular, they say stay away from coffee and tea on airplanes. And they point out that an EPA study found that one in every airplane, commercial flights, fails the agency's standards for water safety. That's a scary thing.
Yes.
And so this article presumes that, while in most cases it's probably safe to drink tap water in a plane or to drink coffee made with that tap water, you'd be better off sticking with bottled water you brought aboard yourself. Do you agree?
I do agree, and I do not drink either one, especially I don't drink tap water.
You want to stay hydrated on a plane. You want to have water, just not that water.
You got to bring bottled water, and usually the flight attendants do have bottled water. And actually, one time I was flying L.A. to Hong Kong on Cathay Pacific, and I was in coach. And all of a sudden, the beginning part of the flight, they were serving bottled water. And then towards the end, all of a sudden, I asked for water, and I knew it was not bottled water.
Yeah.
And I later found out that the flight attendants just go back in the galley and fill up the used bottles with tap water. And they try and – I don't know, it's not just Cathay Pacific. I shouldn't just – it's all airlines do that.
So you got to be – you want to be a little bit careful.
But you can taste the difference.
And,
These holding tanks aren't that clean.
That's the issue.
Plus, it's being transferred so many times before it gets to the plane.
This article quotes the Association of Flight Attendants, which points out that the EPA does regulate the water the flight attendants pushed for that 15 years ago, but the AFA does not believe this regulation goes far enough or is sufficiently enforced. So even the AFA says you might not want to be drinking that water. We don't.
Although I did write about it, and I've had people call in or write in, even flight attendants, saying that's not true. I still drink it, all that stuff. So, you know, it all depends. But, you know, to be on the safe side, stay away from the holding tank water.
I always try to remember before I get on a plane to get a big bottle of water.
Yeah, or just carry an empty bottle of water, bring it through security, and then go to especially San Francisco, they have a great water fountains there.
Right.
And actually, some people, what they do is they freeze a bottle of water before they get to the airport, and you can go through airport security with the frozen water.
You're kidding.
90% of the time,
it's a solid.
You do it as long as it's solid. Yep. I've done it once. I didn't have a problem.
Interesting. And it's nice and refreshingly. It's refreshingly cold.
Yeah, but I don't think bottled water or frozen water is good for you when it's in plastic.
No, maybe not. There's another issue.
I mean, I'm not a doctor, so who the heck knows?
Johnny Jett joins us each week to talk about better flying through technology or travel through technology.
Yes.
Yeah, he usually has a website and an app. What do you got for us?
So actually, just talking about San Francisco, there's a new service that you can travel between L.A. and San Francisco, and they claim it's the dreamiest way to do it.
Oh.
And so it used to be called Sleep Bus, and they totally rebranded.
I know about this,
And now it's called RideCabin.com.
RideCabin.com.
C-A-B-I-N.
Now, have you ever done this, or do you know anybody who's done this?
I have not, and I can't because they don't take kids under 10.
Oh, so on a volunteer. So the idea is it's a bus, but it's a luxury bus.
Exactly, and they're marketing it as America's first moving hotel. So if you want to save money, you know,
I'm
on a
hotel room, this. Yeah,
you can fly. They depart every night at 11 o'clock, either in San Francisco or L.A., and they arrive at 7 a.m., always in downtown. So in L.A., it's Palisades Park in Santa Monica, and then in San Francisco, it's Bayside Lot on Bryan Street.
So it's basically a red eye, but you get a bed, right?
You get a luxury bed. You get
– Well, I don't know about that.
Yeah, well, supposedly that's what they say, super soft sheets, fluffy pillows.
All right. You get two pieces of luggage per person. They will serve you nighttime tea. You might want to turn that down. Free Wi-Fi. Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
And 24/7 cabin attendant, and there's reading lights.
All right, I do want to try this. I'm gonna because we go down to LA pretty frequently. I live up in Northern California, and obviously because of the radio show, we have to go down there.
But it's not that cheap. It's $115. Oh. So you can find flights. You can find flights sometimes when they're on sale for $40.
Yeah, I can fly Southwest for less than that. Yeah,
but you know, it's sometimes this is great for people who don't like to fly.
Interesting. I wonder why they charge that much. You probably can't get as many people on the bus, huh?
Well, they're sleeper cabins. I have no idea how many people. I would assume maybe 12, 15. I don't know. All right.
There you go. It's ridecabin.com. Yeah, your app, please, sir.
All right. Before we run out of time. So you have a dog. You might know about this. It's called Rover. Do you know about Rover?
I used to have a dog, but that's another story. Now, what is Rover?
So this is a great.
We are actually now over. You know, the grief is over. We're now thinking about getting another dog. So I need to know about this.
So this is there's 100,000 pet sitters and dog walkers in North America, U.S. and Canada, and they've all been supposedly really vetted. They only take 20% of people who actually apply.
These are the best, the creme de la creme of dog walkers.
And I wrote about this as well, and I had a lot of comments saying I love Rover. I think one person said they had a problem with it, but you know, the prices are cheap depending on the city you live in. So they range between $15 a night that I could see.
Oh, so you can your dog will stay in somebody's house, not in a kennel.
Exactly, that's the best part about
it. I like that. That's much better.
Or they'll come to your house.
Oh, and they do house sitting. Oh,
yes. So I put in where you live and see how much they cost up in Petaluma.
Yeah.
You know, if you're in a smaller market. You know, our city, it's not going to be as expensive. But San Francisco, they might.
We're going to be taking the bus to L.A., and I have a small dog. Let's just see, for a week. Oh, yeah, $35 a night.
But it keeps growing. You'll see other people in there.
Yeah.
And they charge different prices.
Wow.
There you go.
Wow.
Because I have so many friends who have pets, and they can't travel because it's so expensive.
There's a lot of these. This is a lot less than a kennel.
For sure. And that's what that's why I'm mentioning it. It's a great service. And it seems like people are happy. And through their app, it's a free app. You can get, you know, the photos will be sent to you, you know, real time. They can, you can track the dog, GPS, their walks. They'll even send food and pee and poo alerts, all this stuff. Not that you really need it.
We didn't like putting Ozzy in a kennel because he'd always come back. He'd be a little bit grouchy and kennel coffee. And he's a little dog, and I felt like he probably was always, you know, bullied by the bigger dogs. I don't know.
I'd be grouchy, too.
I would, too. Stuck me in a cage for a week while you went to the Caribbean. How rude is that?
Rude.
Rude. All right. That's a good one. I like it. Rover, R-O-V-E-R, rover.com.
And you know what? And there's some great fares out there. I was just looking right now. Actually, I'm in Toronto.
Yeah.
To fly to Hawaii from here or Montreal, it's actually cheaper than L.A.
Whoa.
It's only $426 round trip on pretty much every airline.
Toronto's a great city, too. That's great.
But to go to Hawaii, you want to get out of Toronto and to go to Hawaii. But from L.A., you can fly to New Delhi, India for $679 round trip on United.
What?
Wow. And from New York, American Airlines has $584 round trip to Hong Kong. These are really good.
You know where you could get these? You don't have to go scour around. Johnny does it. Just go to his website, johnnyjet.com, and subscribe to his travel fare newsletter. It's free. It's free. He's also got great search tools, all sorts of stuff on the site, johnnyjet.com. And you wrote about airplane water, so you can leave your comments there. Don't bother me. I'm sorry, Johnny. I put you in the hot water. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Yeah, after I read that, it kind of made sense. I thought, maybe.
Well, I don't think we mentioned it. That the reason why is because the water's not hot enough. Did we say that? I can't remember.
No, we didn't say that. Yeah, because Dr. Mom said, well, you know, but they're making coffee and tea. It should be killing all the germs.
Yeah, it's not hot enough. And that's the problem.
They're not boiling the water.
Right.
They're just putting hot water.
That was an important piece.
It tastes like it's not hot. Well, the water's – I mean, also if there's other contaminants in the water, heat doesn't kill everything. There could be other toxins in the water.
Or you can carry one of those, you know, the little pen. I can't remember what it's called.
That makes coffee?
No, you know, it cleans the water. So I have friends that travel the world and have not had a bottle of water in 7 years. And they go to India, everywhere in the world.
Water, huh?
Yep. I can't remember the pen.
Find out what that is. I want to get that. That sounds good. Yeah.
I read about that, but let me see.
Yeah.
It's
friends.
A well-known thing.
Yeah,
I know what it is.
It's the water,
anyway.
Water cleaning pen. I just probably can Google that.
Yeah,
and then,
I'm looking for it right now.
Here it is. Petaluma's best house sitters. What? No. I combined Rover with a water cleaning pen.
Man, I'm losing my mind.
Here we go. SteriPen.
Yes, thank you. SteriPen.
SteriPen. Really?
Yes.
Does that work? 4 liters in 150 seconds? Oh, it's ultraviolet. So that only kills amoebas and bacteria.
But these guys use it all over the world. They literally.
Would that be
they
enough,
said they
Dr. Mom, to really just a little UV light? We use UV on our water at home, but we also have other filtration.
Is it the SteriPen Ultra? This is I just looked at my article right now.
Ultraviolet water pen. It's the Quantum Ultra Quantum. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. It's my theme song, Talk This Way. Crystal on the line from Downey, California. Hi, Crystal.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Welcome.
Okay, so I have an 8-year-old little girl that is clearly more tech smart than I am.
Congratulations. You've done something right. That's great.
Thank you. And she's recently gotten really into gaming. And she's really enjoying Minecraft and creating her little world.
Oh, that's great.
Yes. And she's to the point where she's wanting to do mods, which is,
awesome.
And, you know, I'm trying to understand it, but I don't really understand.
You know, I'm in your same shoes. I have a 14-year-old who's always saying, hey, can you install XYZ mod? because we run our own server, and so I'm busy spending all this time putting putting mods on her. So some mods in Minecraft you could put on your – to understand this, you have to understand something called clients and servers. So your computer is a client of a Minecraft server, which is running somewhere out there. And
okay.
And so some mods go on your computer, some mods go on the server side. It just depends on the mod. So she may ask you for something that you can't do that's installed on a – does she go out online and play on Minecraft servers out there in the outside world?
No, I haven't let her do that.
Oh, good. Yet, okay. Well, then all the mods that she could do would be local. But see, the problem is they watch YouTube, right? And they get all these ideas for things they want to do in their Minecraft. Some of them they can't do because they require a server.
Okay. From what I researched, it said that she needed a Windows computer to be able to download some of these mods. Is that accurate?
What is she using right now?
We have all Apple products in our house.
Okay, so one of the things that is confusing is there's two Minecrafts. Microsoft says we're going to unify them someday, but there's the personal edition, which is what she's playing on iPad.
Okay.
And then there's the full Minecraft Java version, which she plays on her Mac.
Right.
And as you probably figured out already, they're different. She's figured it out if you haven't. And so she can't save something she creates on her iPad to her Mac or vice versa. Microsoft does say they're going to fix this.
Okay.
And I think soon, but for now, they're separate. So most of the stuff that you want to do, you could probably do on the Mac. Because Minecraft is written in Java. It's cross-platform, so it doesn't have to be Windows or Mac. But there may be some Minecraft mods that are Windows. The risk there is... now you're starting to install kind of third-party weirdo stuff on your Windows machine. That's good. You picked up on the problem immediately. You probably don't want to do that. I have to tell Michael, you can't install any mods or any changes or download any programs unless you and I do it together. And I try to use this as a teaching moment. He's older than your daughter, obviously, and say, now, how do we figure out if this site is safe and this download is safe? And eventually she will need to do that kind of cyber literacy training because the world's a mess out there.
And, right. Any suggestions on how I could do that for her?
Has she told you what mods she wants to install?
What mods do you want to... She's listening to you because I want her to be able to learn, too.
So oh, yeah.
Wanting to do... There's, like, a Pegasus mod.
Yeah. See, this is a problem. They watch this stuff on YouTube, and they go, oh, that would be so cool if I could have that on my computer.
Right.
And a lot of these are poorly written, sketchy, and, of course, if I were a bad guy, one of the places I would, you know, put my bad stuff is in a site that says... free Minecraft mods. Get them right here. Turn your horse into a Pegasus.
What is that? And there's a YouTuber that she follows called Stacy Plays, and I guess she has a specific mod that she's wanting. Do you think that would be...
If it's a YouTuber and there's a lot, and she has a lot of followers, even if you're not super tech sophisticated, Crystal, you are worldly wise. You've lived... and so you know when something doesn't pass the sniff test, right? Those same skills apply. If you go and you look at her YouTube channel and it looks fine and she looks fine and she's got a lot of followers and, you know, people in the comments saying, oh, this is really great, you're probably okay. You're probably okay. There are better ones than others. You know, what my good friend Chad Johnson has a very good Minecraft channel that I trust 100%. That does describe how to add mods and stuff to your Minecraft. It's OMG Chad. Okay. OMG Chad, one word. He has a Minecraft channel. It's called OMG Craft. And it's really good. And there are others that are very good. And Chad will refer to them sometimes. You kind of build your... this is a great chance to teach your daughter about internet safety, too. You know, and about how to she's old enough at this point to understand that not everybody she'll run into on YouTube is okay, and not every mod will be safe. Now, I know you're thinking about getting a computer just for her. Is she listening?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay, cover your ears, dear.
Okay.
So What I would do is maybe rechannel this energy into something a little more. So there's two kinds of computer users. There's consumers and there's creators, right? And we're all media consumers to some degree, but it's an opportunity, especially at this age, to turn her into a creator. And there are ways to do this with her interest in Minecraft. It is a creative game. It's like Lego. I mean, it's the Lego for this generation. They're building stuff.
Right?
I mean, that's really cool. So one computer you could get her that's inexpensive, and maybe mom would learn a little bit about technology too, is a Raspberry Pi. Now, they're $35, but that doesn't include anything. So you have to get a mouse and a keyboard and a monitor and so forth. You can read up on Raspberry Pis if you just search for Raspberry Pi. You'll see. You can buy these, and they come with Minecraft, but they come with a special edition of Minecraft that's designed to work with programming. And there are a number of books out there that teach programming using Minecraft because kids are so into Minecraft. Microsoft's even done this. One of the reasons Microsoft bought Minecraft is they now have school curriculum built around Minecraft to teach kids principles of coding.
That's fantastic.
I know. And she's, I know 8 sounds young, but this is a great time to start a little bit. It might, at this point, take some mom time as well, you know, to do it with her. And don't be intimidated because, oh, I don't know anything about computers, because you could figure this out.
Okay.
But I think that that's another, and that's inexpensive. This is something that for under $100 you can get a Minecraft setup. You can plug that Raspberry Pi into your TV, and if you have a USB keyboard and mouse lying around, you don't really need to buy anything additional. But it will take a little skill to get it started and all that stuff. So that's kind of the advanced thing. I wouldn't run out and get a Windows machine just for her to play Minecraft. I think everything she wants to do can be done on the Mac and the iPad.
Okay.
And maybe not Pegasus. I don't know. If the, I can look it up and let me see. But you know, but what she's going to learn very quickly is a lot of the things she sees on YouTube aren't really doable anyway. You get a wing, you get wings, and you get horns, and you get hooves. Wow, the Pegasus mod is cool. I'm seeing that right now. This is the real problem I have with YouTube is it gets these kids all excited about stuff that it's hard to do, you know?
It is.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of tough. I was never a big, like, video game child when I was a kid, and back when, you know, that was relevant. I mean, it was, like, Nintendo DS and Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
If not to the extent that the games are today, and I was never really into it. But
here's an opportunity, we want to get more young women into technology. It's a great thing for her to know and at least have a comfort. Not everybody's going to end up writing computer code for a living, but having some comfort with how computers operate and all of that stuff is very valuable.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, I don't know if I've helped you much, but I would not get a Windows PC for this.
Okay.
She's got a Mac. She's got a great computer.
We think so. So that's why I'm doing research on like a Windows computer.
No. She's 8, right? She doesn't know. She's going to see, you know, mods that only run on Windows that she really, really has to have. But sorry. You can't have it.
I didn't see the benefit of getting a Windows computer. I've always felt like the Mac is a safer option.
It is. And especially when you're going out to third parties and downloading software and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a unicorn mod that it looks like you could install on the Macintosh. So,
got excited.
Yeah, I think get the unicorn. That's better than Pegasus anyway. Wings, horns, and hooves. The ultimate unicorn mod. Try that. Leo Laporte, the tech. Guy. I left out Guy, the tech. Guy. Yeah, I mean, the problem, Crystal, is that ultimately, you kind of want her to learn this, but she's so young at this point. You need to give.
Well, she's already. What I've been observing her doing that made me want to, you know, encourage her to pursue what she's doing is is that she's taken the time. She's read all the little books.
Oh, that's so neat.
That give her the codes and, you know, this and that. And she's able to go in there, and she's just, she already knows these little codes, and she does her little forward slash, and she types in the code, and it takes her here, and it does this. And she's already, you know, going that route.
And you want to encourage that. And really, in a way, this is computer literacy. I'm thrilled that you understand that, because it really is. And so it's certainly good to do this. Create your own custom unicorn. This does include a Pegasus, by the way.
Awesome.
Yeah. Let me just see. It looks like you have to buy something. So in general, for your benefit, to understand this, in most cases, the client-side mods are just files that you put in a plugin folder where your Minecraft is installed. They won't work on the iPad. They'll only work on the Mac.
Okay.
But if you look where Minecraft is, actually on the Mac, I have to look. You might have to right-click the Minecraft file to get into this folder. Let me just look real quickly. Minecraft is written in Java, which is a platform agnostic programming language, so that was a smart move because it runs on Linux, Mac, and Windows. Let's see if I have Minecraft on here. I just want to see. Yeah, I don't, unfortunately, because I want to see. Maybe somebody in the chat room will know. When you install a mod on Mac Minecraft, is the plugin file inside the Minecraft app? Do you right click and open contents? I bet you do. I bet you do. So, yeah, it gets a little complicated, and the chat room's not really following. So, there'll be instructions. Let's see. This is latest release file, 4th of July. That's the other thing. You want to make sure that they're up to date because it has to work with your current Minecraft version. So, that's another issue, and you have to know your version of Minecraft and the current version. And
she was explaining that to me last night. She was like, I have version 12.1, and but this runs with this version. And
she's saying, Mom, it's 1.12. Come on, Mom.
Yes, 1.12.
Here is a good link from Engadget, the ultimate Mac user's guide to Minecraft on OS X, mods, skins, and more. Mm-hmm. Chat room's given me. I'll put this in the show notes at techguylabs.com. Once I think James at Comic-Con, but when James gets back from Comic-Con. So changing your character skin. Let me look at this here. Installing resource packs. Start your mod. Oh, you do it. Install it from the client. That's normal for a resource pack. Installing mods. Here we go. This is the part I want. Okay, you've got the game up and running. You've changed your characters. Oh, you need Minecraft Forge. So you download that and install that. That's safe, Minecraft Forge, but make sure you get it from the Forge website, which is minecraftforge.net. That is a plug-in installer that you will need for almost all of these. And that adds a mods section to the menu. Okay, this is how you do it on the Mac. And you can then install from there.
Okay.
So we'll put if you want to do it right now before we get the website up to date, just search the Ultimate Mac User's Guide to Minecraft.
Okay.
It's a long article on Engadget, and it has actually all the stuff a mom needs to know.
Perfect.
You'll be a Minecraft expert. And then she should read it. She should read it too. Sounds like she's. This is what's great about Minecraft, that they're now motivated to do this.
And yeah, she's a very smart little girl. And
yeah,
I see her become passionate about something. I want to be sure to encourage her and give her the tools that she needs.
Exactly.
To do that.
Exactly. And I think this is a really great opportunity. This is. I mean. She'll run into this in middle school and high school. They're starting to use Minecraft for curricula.
Really?
Because they want to go to where kids are, and this is it's hard to get kids excited in this day and age. They're so jaded now. Neat. I think that's great. Say again.
Extensions or anything like that you would recommend that I could take her to that might spark their interest about coding or Minecraft.
Yes. Look for App Camp for Girls.
Okay.
There is a summer camp. It's probably too late. It might not be too late for this year, but it'd be worth looking into. I don't know if they have them in the Southern California, but they might. They started in Seattle, and they're all over the country. App Camp for girls. It's awesome. Wonderful. It's wonderful. Awesome. If she doesn't do it this year, she could do it next summer.
That would be perfect.
Hey, thanks, Crystal.
Thank you so much for your time, Leo.
My pleasure. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
We'll put a whole bunch of resources in the show notes. There's the Parents Guide to Installing Minecraft Mods. Well, it depends on the middle schooler. I have a high schooler who's very much into Minecraft. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk tech, computers, and the internet, and home theater, and digital photography, and smartphones, and smartwatches, and, you know, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO is my number if you want to call and ask a question, and we can talk tech together or make a comment, make a suggestion. 888-827-5536. This week, a lot of companies announced their quarterly profit and loss, something that publicly held companies do four times a year. Microsoft announced its quarterly results, and it was a good quarter for Microsoft. A very good quarter. Net income in 3 months of $6.5 billion. And they, for the first time ever, made more money with Microsoft Office subscriptions than they did with people buying a box of software on the shelf. That's really the future for Microsoft. Is, you know, subscriptions to software. A lot of companies want to do that. In fact, more and more, I bet you if you look at the software you use, you don't buy it outright. You don't, I mean, where would you go anyway to go buy software off a shelf anyway? Do you get floppy disks, CDs? How do you download it nowadays, right? Anyway. And so it's, even if you don't think you're paying a subscription, I think in many cases you are because, well, if you want the update, that'll be another $15, please. Microsoft's Office 365 is a subscription that's between $8 and $35 a month, depending on what you get and, you know, what plan you've got. And you just automatically get all the updates forever. And if you, truthfully, I think I pay $7.99 a month for the home version. And so that's what, under $100 a year? Well, it was $700 to buy the boxed edition, so I thought, well, that's a pretty good deal. Same thing with Adobe. I use Adobe software. I'm a as I said, an avid amateur photographer, a hobbyist. So I use Adobe's Lightroom program and their Photoshop program, and I get a subscription to both of those, automatically updating for $10 a month, $120 a year, and for a product, Photoshop alone, $800. Lightroom, I think it was last time I bought it, was at least $200. So that's a good deal. Now, it's a good deal for the company, too, because they have a steady cash flow. And obviously, it's worked for Microsoft. Cloud was big. That's the Microsoft Azure product, the online stuff. And that's really what Microsoft sees as its future, I believe. It's one of the reasons they've started to give away Windows. It used to be a software company. Now it's a cloud company with a little software and hardware on the side. $23 billion in revenue. Wow. They took a kind of a write-off for their Windows Phone division. $1.8 billion write-off, which reduced their tax rate quite a bit. But, you know, they made so much money that even losing $1.8 billion is, you know, that's less than a month's profit. So, okay. Okay. They, Office, huge success. Consumer products revenue up 13%. Commercial products revenue up 5%. LinkedIn made them a revenue, not profit, but a revenue of $1.1 billion. That was the company they acquired. For how much? Not just a few billion, right? Last year. Revenue in Intelligent Cloud. I don't know what that is. What's Intelligent Cloud? $7.4 billion. That must be Azure. Revenue in personal computing. That includes Windows and their hardware, the laptops, the Surface. and search and gaming and Xbox, that's personal computing, revenue was down 2%, $8.8 billion. But that's mostly because of the phone. The phone was a flop. Gaming revenue up 3%. That's the Xbox. That's not good, not bad. Search advertising revenue up 10%. Surface was down. I like the Microsoft Surface products. I think they're among the best Windows products out there, although it's a very competitive market, and there are lots of good companies making Windows products. But I don't think Microsoft sees it as an important part of their business. I don't know. It's an interesting question. They've never made laptops before. This is kind of new for them. And they've had problems. For instance, their new Surface Book, or no, I'm sorry, Surface Pro, which is the tablet that has a little floppy attachable keyboard on it, has had some serious issues with going to sleep spontaneously and things like that. I had lots of problems with my Surface Book. Took about 8 months for Microsoft to figure out why that was turning itself on while it was in my briefcase, things like that. It wasn't just me. It was a lot of people. I think it was everybody. So they may be still struggling as a hardware manufacturer, but they don't have to worry because they make money in other ways. It's one of the most innovative companies out there. 8888-ASK-LEO. We could talk about that or anything else on your mind. 888-827-5536. Let's pick up the lines and talk to Ethan in Los Angeles. He's next. Hi, Ethan.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. That last call was amazing. I happen to be in the tech industry, and it's just great to see such young...
8-year-old girl into computers because of Minecraft. Isn't that... people knock Minecraft. I think it's one of the best things ever, frankly.
I totally agree. I have an intern that's working for me right now. Kid is 20 years old, and I'm intimidated.
Well, it's a mixed bag because there's also a lot of kids who aren't really good at computers, and I worry about them since that's the world they're growing up in.
Right. Well, let me jump into it. Actually talked to you a while ago about issues with concerns about my Note 7, and we brought up this potential conspiracy theory about them not changing the hardware. Turns out it's probably true. I'm very happily speaking to you on a Pixel XL, and I'm loving it.
Yep. Very happy with the Google's version. I have a Galaxy S8, and Samsung has kept that up to date. In fact, I just got the July security updates from Google. To me, any Android phone, if you're going to consider it, it absolutely has to have regular security patches. That's just vital. So I'm happy to see that Samsung's doing that. Now, you know that August 23rd, 1 month from tomorrow, the Note 8 comes out.
Oh, boy.
It's going to be a challenge. I mean, they really got some black eye from the exploding Note 7s.
I love that phone.
I thought it was a great phone. That's right. Yeah.
The issue I'm actually having with is actually a much rarer Pixel product, which is their second generation Pixel laptop.
Oh, but I love that laptop. Oh, I love that
laptop.
Me
too.
Yeah.
However, I think I even brought it up last time we talked, was that if anything were to happen to it, I'd be very concerned. And the worst case scenario happened. I got a little bit of water in the keyboard.
Oh.
I took some steps to try to get it the air out. I tried prying off some keys, which you're not supposed to do, apparently. Google help, Google support, well, very courteous, actually. Just really couldn't help because I admitted, number one, that it was a water issue. Don't do that, maybe.
Yeah.
And number two was that I've had it for over a year. There's no warranty left anyways.
Well, and the reason we were concerned is Google has kind of stopped making parts for this thing. Think it's sad to say, this was the best Chromebook available. It was very expensive. I spent $1,300 on mine. And
I think I have the 18 gig one. It's even maybe a bit more than that. But I use this thing for work. I use all web apps.
Yeah.
The company I work at was built on Google Sheets, a very large transportation company. And so, this has been great for me. It's way better than the MacBook Air they provide me.
I agree.
But I don't know what to do. Can a local shop fix it for me, number one?
Possibly. Yeah.
And number two, what are the rumors on the new one coming out?
All right, hang on the line. I'll tell you about that. We've got to take a little bit of a break.
Cool.
I love talking about Chromebooks. You know that. I get dinged for it from once in a while, but I really think for a lot of people, a Chromebook is an excellent choice. 8888, ask Leo, what do you think? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So that's an interesting question. I would say it's probably repairable. Doesn't, you know, the way its industrial design is, the Pixel does not look like it's difficult to fix. You know what I'm saying? It looks like it's easy to get into. But the parts aren't out there. So what you or anybody who wants to repair it will have to probably do is buy old Pixels.
Oh, man.
Because where else are you going to get a keyboard? If your keyboard's shot, where else are you going to get one? I'm presuming you can replace that keyboard. I may be wrong on that. But I would bet just, you know, it's such a boxy thing. I bet you look at it. See if it has screws. And I don't have mine in front of me. But I bet you could just take out a few screws and... It's probably more like a Lenovo ThinkPad in terms of repairability than a MacBook.
Right.
More on that scale. Yeah,
I guess we'll take it apart and see.
Yeah, the parts are going to be the challenge, and I think the only way to do that will be by used old, you know, somebody's broken Pixel.
I'm sure there's so much more we could talk about, but probably not on air. I actually work for Uber. And,
oh, interesting.
PR department might be upset if I start.
Yeah. Well, you're still on the, you know, the podcast and the stream, so we won't say any more. But do you like it? Is it a good job?
Yeah, it's actually great.
It's a technology driven company. You know, I don't know about the rest of it, but it's nice to work for a company where the technology leads.
Absolutely. I think it's ultimately there are instances where we can always do better to help out our drivers and riders, but overall very focused on moving the customer experience forward.
I still take Ubers. I never did delete the app, and I still take Ubers. All I took one the other day. It's just the easiest way. In San Francisco, there's more than 500 Uber drivers, so it's so easy to get around. And I'd still take the black cars because it's not that expensive.
Yeah, no, that's a great product.
I agree.
Decreasing in popularity, unfortunately, but
because of UberX, and in some ways, I don't think UberX is a good thing because you get a lot of drivers who are not nearly as skillful or serious about what they're doing.
Sure,
but I understand that's where you have to go to expand. What do you do? Are you a sysadmin or?
I'm actually a growth manager in the marketing department.
Oh my God, you're in the growth division! Wow. Oh, I bet you have some stories to tell. How long have you been there?
I've been there about a little less than a year.
Oh, okay. All right. Do you see it changing? You see the corporate culture changing a little bit?
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Yeah.
I think for the best, truly.
Oh, it has to.
I wasn't there when I think maybe a lot of the issues maybe have started to happen.
I think you're right.
I've seen a very positive change.
Good. Good.
Very, very smart people trying to make.
Well, that's clear, right? That's clear. And I'm a little sad that Travis couldn't continue on, but because he's clearly a genius, but he also maybe isn't such a genius in interpersonal relationships. So sometimes that's part of the job when you're CEO. That's why I'm not CEO. Now,
when a company jumps from 300 employees or even a dozen to
crazy
many thousand.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah.
Difficult.
Yeah. Hey, it's great to talk to you. Yeah, I'd love to talk again. Anytime you want to call, Evan, just give us a jingle.
Absolutely.
All right. Yeah, try to get that Pixel fixed. Oh, you wanted to talk about the future. I'll tell you what. Hang up. I'll talk about it on the air. There's no credible rumor that Google's making any more Pixels.
That's a huge bummer.
I know.
I'm really not. I've lost
That's Google
my way
for
with
you.
Apple.
Yeah, me too.
I'm tempted. I'm more likely to get a PC.
Yeah, me too. I bought a Lenovo. I love my ThinkPad. You would too. Trust me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. We were talking about the Pixel Chromebook, which was Google made two generations of Pixel Chromebooks at a crazy price. They started at $1,000 for a Chromebook. Now, the Chromebook runs on a Google operating system called Chrome OS. The name Chrome should be familiar. It's the best, most used, I've almost said best-selling, but nobody buys it. It's free. The best used, most used browser out there. And Chrome OS and a Chromebook essentially is the Chrome browser And that's it. It benefits both in because of the simplicity and in security. It's a very secure system. And if the kind of work you do is primarily online, on the cloud, it's a cloud computer. And nowadays, in fact, when the Pixel first came out or the Chromebooks first came out, I was a little skeptical. I was early on a big skeptic. I remember talking to the head of the Chrome OS division at the time, Sundar Pichai, is now the CEO at Google, and almost debating him, saying, Sundar, I don't see this as a product. It's just a browser. And he was, to his credit, calmly made a very good argument for the use of the Chromebook in schools and businesses where they were primarily online. They had ubiquitous Wi-Fi, and security and simplicity were paramount. He made a good case for it. I still didn't buy it, but that was years ago. And now that Wi-Fi, high-speed internet is pretty much everywhere you go, even as you're out and about, I feel like the Chromebook has come of age. I recommend it for school kids. My daughter, a college daughter, age daughter, uses one. I use one. I like it. Our son in high school uses one as their primary computer. And I find they're very effective. And now that you can run Android apps on them, the newest Chromebooks, I feel like there's a lot of versatility. And I'm a little worried about that, frankly. I think it might be better not to. Certainly be more secure not to, but certainly adds to the number of apps available and the versatility of the device. There are some very, very nicely made Chromebooks from companies like Samsung. I bought several of the Chromebook Pluses. Really like those. Acer, A-C-E-R. Asus might make the best one, the Asus C302. Another all aluminum unibody kind of device. It looks a lot like a Macintosh laptop, but it's running the Chrome OS. So I like them a lot. But our caller wanted to know what I thought about Google coming up with the Pixel 3, the third generation Pixel. And I've heard no rumors. There was, one of the Googlers did kind of imply that they hadn't abandoned it. So they could surprise us, but I don't anticipate another Chromebook from Google, oddly enough. There were big sellers. They were too expensive. Most Chromebooks top out at $500. Why would you spend twice that? Well, because it was really, really powerful, really well made. Lots of RAM, powerful chip, beautiful screen. Solid construction. Those are highly prized, but Google's already said we're not going to support them anymore, we're not going to make any more, and there won't be parts available for them. So it's really kind of the end of the line for what was, I think many will look back over the years, one of the great computers of all time, the Chromebook Pixel. But I wouldn't count on another one. Fortunately, these third parties have stepped up like Samsung, Asus, and Acer, so there are some good choices. I think HP has some now. It's Linux, by the way, and if you're a little more sophisticated, you can make it, if you're willing to give up both simplicity and security, you can make it be a Linux computer. But for most people, I think just running it as a Chromebook is the right way to go. It's pretty darn good. A lot of people, I would say, should use that as opposed to a Windows or a Mac machine. They're overbuying. They're buying too much power when they use a Windows or Mac machine. But for our caller, for Evan, I can't say wait for Google to come up with the third generation Pixel. I see no evidence that they're going to do that. Just bite the bullet, get a Acer. The Chromebook Pro is out now. That's running an Intel chip, which means it probably won't do great at Android. I like the Chromebook Plus, frankly. Jim from Las Vegas is next. Hi, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Better than I deserve.
Well, how so?
Well, I've got an HP. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you great. Can you hear me okay?
Sure. 5x5.
5x5.
Okay. I've got a 5-year-old HP Pavilion laptop, and I think my hard disk is starting to fail. What do you think about converting to a solid-state drive, and what should I know?
I always say, at this point, certainly if you're buying a new computer, get a solid-state drive. They're reliable. They're much faster than spinning hard drives. The only question is whether that Pavilion is upgradable. Is it a laptop or a desktop?
It's a laptop, but it's a fairly powerful one. I've got a clock speed of 2.7 gigahertz, and it has a turbo boost accelerator overclocker to 3.6. It's got 8 gig of DDR3.
None of that matters. There are two things to consider. One, whether you can actually open it up and replace the hard drive. And two, whether the connection for the hard drive is fast enough to accommodate SSD. From what you've described, I'm sure it is. Ideally, you would want, it's going to be a SATA connector in there, and you'd want SATA 3, which is the fastest. But even SATA 2 would be fast enough to see some improvement. I wouldn't buy a spinning drive, frankly, these days. I don't. I buy only SSDs, except in some unusual cases, like if you're going to do a network-attached storage device or something like that.
When you buy an SSD, does it have or come with its own controller, or do you have to buy that?
It will look just like a standard SATA drive to the laptop. So you're going to get one that works with your laptop. Now, it's a little trickier on a laptop. If it were a PC, no big deal. If you could open up a tower and replace a hard drive, you'd just as easily replace it with an SSD as a spinning drive. That wouldn't be a big deal. The SSDs are thinner, so you'd have to get a bracket to hold it, but that's all. It's a much more of an issue on a laptop because access on modern laptops is often restricted to the insides. I don't know about that particular pavilion. What you probably want to do is do some research on your particular model and see, maybe on Reddit or iFixit.com, see if anybody's got any videos on opening it up and replacing the hard drive. And then you're going to have to see if you can get the form factor that fits, that replaces. It's got to physically be the same shape and size as the one in the laptop. Laptops are so often customized that may be a challenge. It depends on how the hard drive is embedded in there. But if you can physically replace it, absolutely get an SSD. There's no reason not to these days. They're faster, they're better. And we had some concerns early on that they wouldn't be as reliable as spinning drives. I think we can now lay that to rest. With modern operating systems, modern software, they are absolutely as reliable. And because there's no moving parts in a laptop, I think they're probably more reliable. They don't, laptops get banged around. That's not good for spinning hard drives. Doesn't bother an SSD. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. If you want to talk, website techguylabs.com. That's a great place to put your thoughts and your comments. If you disagree with me, I know there's some people in the chat room say, don't buy a Chromebook. That's nuts. That's the place to hash it out. Techguylabs.com. It's free. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you want to talk high tech, I'd like to do it with you. Ed's on the line from Anaheim, California. Hi, Ed.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
What can I do for you today?
Well, I'm a power user. I shoot with a Nikon D4S. And I need a laptop that can handle all that, a PC-based, something that's powerful and that it's a solid program. It's a solid whole structure and everything. I had a Dell XPS years ago.
Love those still. They're still great.
Yeah, they were great.
Yeah.
The one that I had, though, they had some problems, and it was very well known amongst the net, and they'd come out a couple times and replaced motherboards, et cetera. And when you're trying to use the machine and it's for your work and everything, you really can't deal with that type of
stuff. I have to say that with at least the top five manufacturers, I've seen remarkable improvements overall in quality control. And I think a lot of us remember those dim, dark days when you had bad capacitors and weird leaking things and, just problems that would go on and on. Hard drives that just would crash randomly. And I think we've really, I don't know what the difference is, except it's a more mature industry. But I think computers are much more reliable. Certainly the operating systems are much more reliable. What software do you use for post?
Photoshop off the cloud, and then also Lightroom and CorelDRAW.
So the biggest thing I notice, especially with a camera like yours, where you have massive files, is, and I have the same problem with my 5D, is the file sizes are so big that Lightroom gets bogged down a little bit, that it can't go from picture to picture very quickly. It takes a little time to render. And so if that's an issue, of course, you're going to want to get more horsepower. You're going to want to have a SSD, and you're going to want to have a fast processor. I think it's mostly processor bound. I couldn't guarantee that. I know some of the things Adobe does use the GPU, so a good GPU might also help there. I actually use Photo Mechanic, which is a $150 program as a front end to Lightroom, because it's fast. It uses JPEGs, and I use that for selection. And then I cut it way down to the pictures I want, and then go into Lightroom, and then Lightroom's adequate for that kind of thing, just not for scanning through photos quickly. I think the Dell XPSs today are great. One of the reasons they're a great choice is because of the borderless screen, you know, almost no bezel. And that means you get a bigger screen and a smaller laptop. The XPS 13 is, you know, as big as, say, an 11 or 12-inch laptop, but with a 13-inch screen. It's really great. Screen quality is very good. Now, for you, obviously, color reproduction is paramount. You probably want a P3 screen or a screen that's capable of doing that kind of color gamut. I use for the same purposes, a Lenovo Yoga ThinkPad, the X1 Yoga, second generation. One of the reasons I like it, it has an OLED, an OLED screen, which has superior color reproduction. It can do Adobe RGB, sRGB, and P3 color gamuts. You get to choose, which for a photographer is marvelous. If you shoot in Adobe RGB, for instance, to have the screen be Adobe RGB is that's great.
So, yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, it's a touch screen too, which I really like with Windows 10, and Lightroom has a touch mode that makes it very easy and quick to use if you want to sit back and you're on your sofa and do some photo processing in your spare time. I've been increasingly happy with this Yoga. I bought it about 2 months ago. And I was just thinking this morning, this is a great notebook. So that's another one I'd recommend.
Okay, great. Yeah, on a situation like this, cost is not really the factor.
No,
it's reliability.
This is your business. Yeah, this is serious.
Right.
You spent enough on that Nikon to justify almost any cost for the laptop.
Yeah, you got that right.
So I really think that the high-end ThinkPads are still excellent. And I love an OLED screen. That hits battery life a little bit, but boy, the reproduction is excellent. And then I think the Dell screens are very, very good as well. Second tier companies that I think are reliable and make good products, Asus, A-S-U-S, is very good these days. And believe it or not, HP, some of their, it depends on what you're looking for, thin and light versus power. It sounds like to me, color accuracy is probably number one, I would expect.
Yeah, exactly. This is a laptop that, you know, it's in this modern way where it really is a tower, but it isn't.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be moved a lot. It's going to stay on a desktop.
Yeah, it's a desktop replacement.
Not the problem.
Yeah. And do you run a second screen off of it?
No, I don't.
Look at the other reason of, I think, photographers are starting to move away from Mac and towards Windows is the ports. You know, I like Type-C ports. I think they're great. But I still want USB. I like an SD card reader. I mean, there's some things that Apple's just kind of leaving by the wayside as if people don't use them anymore. But I do. So one of the reasons I love the Yoga, it has three USB 3.1 ports, two Type-3 USB ports. It doesn't have an SD card reader, but that's all right. You probably use a high-speed. If you're a serious photographer, you're going to want to get a Thunderbolt 3 card reader anyway. That's
right.
Much, much faster for importing. So I would take a look at this Yoga. I would highly recommend that. Or the X1 Carbon. That's also very nice. But the OLED screen on the Yoga, man, is that beautiful. And you can choose the color gamut, which is incredible.
Yeah, well, battery life, again, where it's more desktop-based battery.
You don't care
life,
about that.
Factor,
right.
Because you're going to be plugging it into the electricity on a regular basis.
Yep.
Right.
Hey, let me know what you choose.
Okay.
Thanks,
great.
Ed. Yeah.
All right. Thank
great
you.
To talk to you. What kind of photography do you do?
Motorsports.
Oh, fun. No wonder you use a Nikon.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I started with film about 50 years ago with a Nikon F.
Wow.
And wow. Let me tell you, it's a whole different ball game today. But,
oh,
you know,
isn't
I mean,
it?
I actually used to have to actually focus the camera and actually have to set the settings. And you know, you were like a real photographer back then.
My first serious camera was a Nikon FM, which is a full manual. And
yeah.
I still today, every once in a while, I think I can do a better job with my eyes focusing than the camera can. But they're getting, for motorsports, who has the, ain't nobody got time to focus.
No. Well, you know what? When everybody has automatic focus and you try to do it old school, you're just a fool.
You're just a fool. And I think you're right. You've got, that's one of the reasons you own an Icon, because it's got the best. Yep.
Right. Yeah, you know, the FM back in the day was a good secondary camera for a lot of us that carried an F as a primary and an FM as a secondary.
Oh, I loved it. I shot Tri-X that I rolled myself and processed myself. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's what I shot. I shot thousands of rolls of Tri-X in my life.
We're sounding like old-timers now. The kids are going, what do you mean processed? What do you mean? You just put it in the phone, right? And you just upload it to Instagram. What are you talking about? What you talking about?
Yeah, hey, but you know, Leo, the funny thing is the young people, the younger generation, is rediscovering film, and they're very fascinated by it.
Yeah, you know, these instant cameras, Polaroid-like cameras, are huge with kids. They
very
want
big.
Polaroids.
Yeah, very big.
What's that all about? Hey, very nice to talk to you.
Deal.
I appreciate it, Ed.
What's new is old, and what's old is new.
It all comes around again. Apparently, who is it? I think Sony is making vinyl records again because the demand is so high.
Yeah.
Vinyl. People are buying record players. What a world. 8888, Ask Leo, that's the phone number. And I got to reiterate the website, which will have everything I talk about, links, pictures. In fact, we even put the audio from the show and the video from the show after the fact up there, is techguylabs.com. There's no sign up. I don't want your money. I don't want your email address. It's just there for you. We've got, I think, a very good search. So you can go back through previous shows. There are 1,406 shows on there. And pretty much anything you want to know, you'll find it up there, including how to install the latest version of Windows XP. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Look what I got. I dimly remember ordering this a long time ago. It's an endoscope. Yeah, no, this is my, we were just talking about this. This is my ThinkPad.
Oh, I know. That's why I almost handed it.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, here it is, right here. I love it that you can do this.
I think
it's
that's
awesome.
An option if kids are artists.
Oh, yeah, and it has a stylus.
Right. So,
I love this. This is.
I remember if that was one of them. But I gotta
yeah, it's really expensive, is the only reason I wouldn't recommend it. Okay. But boy, the picture is phenomenal. And I think I have this on, let me see what I set it for. I think it's on, is it Adobe RGB? I can't remember which one I set it for. Let's see here. What is, it's kind of bright right now. But this is awesome. This is really amazing. So this is the Lenovo software in there. And look at this. Color settings. This is standard, which is what it is right now, sRGB. It changes the white point. That's Adobe RPG. This is DCI-P3. Blue light cut for office. Blue light cut for reading. And then custom. So you can make your own profile. I guess I left it on sRGB. You know what? I shoot sRGB. That's probably the best one. Although I love it that you can get DCI-P3. So that's different color gamuts. And this is on this OLED. Man, they look good. It looks so good. And, you know, I mean, it's got the Lenovo keyboard, which is awesome. Got ports like crazy. There's Type-C, Type-C, USB. USB. Oh, and you could. Why does that have a battery next to it? Oh, that'll charge stuff from the USB. That's right. And then the only thing weird, it has a weird proprietary Ethernet connector, but I have the dongle for that. headphone and headset jack, USB, full size HDMI. Don't you love that? Stylus fits right in here. It's not as probably as good a stylus as the Microsoft stylus, but it's fine. Very, very happy. Yeah, I don't know how the OLEDs will wear. I've heard people, complain about them. The blue channel, I think, goes supposedly. Although I have OLEDs like crazy on my TVs and stuff. I don't have any problem with that. I use Photo Mechanic. I just want to show Photo Mechanic. There we go. So what's nice about this is I can go through these pictures with instant to go do the selection, right? Lightroom won't let me do that fast. So that's really a nice feature. Download Photo Mechanic. And I'll show you with Lightroom, even on this machine, which is an i7 and super fast, I can't go through the pictures that fast. I think Michael Cozio has your number, Dick DiBartolo. He knows how you feel about the disco. Welcome to Funky Town, a.k.a. Gizneyland, with Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer and our gizwiz, because he brings us gizmos, and he's a wizard every week. Welcome to Funky Town, a.k.a. Gizneyland.
How you doing?
I'm well, Dickie D. How are you?
I'm doing good. Is that a backpack? What is going on in the back of you? Anyway.
I'm sitting on a chair. I know you're not used to me having a seat back, but I'm sitting in a chair. This is kind of one of those crazy, high-tech chairs that you see in startups. You got a high back, and it's got adjustments for every possible configuration. It's not my chair. I, as you know, used to sit on a yoga ball, and I gave myself sciatica.
That is the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt. It just, my leg goes to sleep. So I don't, so I thought, well, I better sit in a chair. I guess I'm old. And then I said, well, is there a spare chair? And we had hired a guy as our engineering guy. And little did I know, he bought a very, very fancy chair for himself. It's basically a throne. So so he doesn't work here anymore. But I have his chair. Okay. Anyway. Right? Yeah, so sometime you should do chairs, like Aeron, those Aeron chairs and stuff like that. What do you sit in? You sit in a nice office chair?
Yeah, I sit in an office chair. It's, it's like from Staples, so it's not an amazing chair. Yeah.
No, you can spend thousands of dollars.
Oh, my goodness. I once had a $1,500 chair, and it lasted a long time because I wouldn't sit in it. I said,
I never wore out.
I said, that's just for company. I am not that chair's for company.
So what do you got for us today?
So, I have a great thing for summer, mainly for guys, because you go on vacation, you put on some weight, and then you lose weight. And so I found this on Amazon. So far, I have bought three of them.
Uh-oh.
It is the no-hole dress belt.
Well, what good is a dress? What good is a belt without holes?
Leo, this is very clever. There's
punch-it-yourself dress belt. Where I add holes as I get fatter.
All right. So behind that belt, where you can't see it, there are 32 little indentations built into the belt.
Ooh.
When you lift up on the buckle, it releases the mechanism. You can slide that every quarter inch.
Oh, I need this.
And when you let go of the buckle, it locks it in place.
It's ironic that you should mention this, because when I went to the doctor and said, my leg is tingly, is that sciatica? He said, no, you just shouldn't wear a belt anymore. It's pressing on a nerve. So I went to suspenders, but if I had a belt that fit, maybe I wouldn't have that problem.
There are two kinds. There's one from Dante. The one from Dante, you can get 24 different very ornamental buckles, but their release is at the bottom, so it's a little tricky to use. The one that I like best is called the no-hole dress belt, and that when you pull up on the buckle itself, and that releases the belt to adjust.
Everybody should have a pair of
these. This is great. So it can go from 28 to 48 inches.
28 to 48. Wow. That's me after a big weekend. Yeah. Wow.
If you're smaller, you can trim it off. And I was reading some of the reviews on Amazon. People, trim it off at the flat end, not the trim end that goes through your pants, because you will ruin the way it looks.
Right, and you never be able to get it through any more pants after that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So just follow the instructions. And they're cheap. The one I like best is Perfect Fit. That's $15. And the Dante with the fancy buckles, $17.
It makes me feel like we've been buckling it wrong all this time. This is just obvious. What do you need holes for?
When I got it, I go, how could this be so simple?
Why haven't we been doing this all the time?
And if you want the one that it looks exactly like a belt, if you don't want the fancy belt buckle, it looks like it's a belt that's fitting through a hole, but it's not. Everything's happening behind the belt.
Kind of like my life.
Yeah, exactly.
Dick DiBartolo is Mad's Maddest Writer. You'll find his website where he talks about this and all of the gadgets he talks about. He was just on World News Now. I stayed up and I watched.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. You can find that at gizwiz.biz. That's his website, gizwiz.biz. While you're there, don't forget to play the What the Heck Is It contest, which is a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Who autographs that, by the way?
Just anybody in the street. No.
You autograph it. That's
I autograph them personally.
Yes. And if you play
my name and your name,
you sign it Leo Laporte. The heck is this? It looks like a retainer of some kind. I don't know, but go and look at it. There's 12 autographed Mad magazines for the right answer, but there's 24 for the wrong answer. So, well, you know, do the math. And then we can see what it was last time. And I guess this contest goes through the end of...
Yeah, this is the end of August. So this is the July-August game.
The end of summer.
End of summer.
Gizwiz.biz. Don't forget Dick's great podcast. He talks about this kind of stuff like crazy with Chad Johnson, OMG Chad, on gizwiz.tv every week. Thank you, Dickie D.
Thank you, sir. I'll see you next week.
We'll talk next week. Bill in Panama City, Florida. I think you're our last call of the day. Hi, Bill. Oh, I got to push a button. I was already off duty. Hi, Bill.
How you doing?
I'm well. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm trying to figure out something. I've got a TV, and I sit way across the room, and I wonder, are there a sound bar you can get that I can hook a Bluetooth speaker up so I can have it next to me across the room?
So you want a wireless sound bar?
Yes. Well, I went to went to a place and they said they don't make it so that you can hook up just any.
Most TVs don't have Bluetooth. However, you can, if your TV has sound output, older TVs might have a headphone jack. That would work great. If not, you'll have to get something that'll work with whatever the sound output of your TV is. You can get a Bluetooth transmitter that will take the sound and then it'll put it through the speaker. The only issue that's going to come up is there might be little delay. Bluetooth is not designed to sync up audio and video, right? And so the picture's coming right to you at the speed of light, but then the sound's got to go meandering out through this Bluetooth transmitter and go across the room to it's still the speed of light, but it's still going a lot through a lot of stuff, gets compressed, goes into the Bluetooth enabled sound bar, and many sound bars do support Bluetooth, and then plays. You might see that the lip sync is off, right?
Well, the sound bars I find are, they have Bluetooth available, but I want to know.
Yeah, no, the sound bar does, but the TV doesn't. So you got to get a Bluetooth transmitter for your TV, and then you're going to have sync issues, is what I'm saying.
Okay, but see the sound bars I'm telling you about, they have Bluetooth and they have a cordless speakers. But I want to know, can I hook it up to any of my Bluetooth speakers? I've got a half dozen Bluetooth speakers. Are they proprietary to the soundbar, or can I hook...
Wait a minute. You want the soundbar to connect to the speaker?
Yes.
Why?
Because I'm sitting way across the room.
Oh, the soundbar is connected to the TV already. I thought you wanted to put the sound bar back there. You know what you should do? Get a wireless pair of headphones. I'm a big fan, and we've mentioned this before. Sennheiser makes headphones for TV. Got them for my mom. Then you can sit anywhere you want. The sound will be perfect stereo. That's the easiest way to do it. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.